Oh, thanks so much, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy.
Skadoobadot.
Skadoobadot is the message we send to you. How do you reach us? 312-981-7200.
There's a motion in the ocean.
That part's true.
It's Bill left swimming.
That's right.
Or stuck in a kayak. Didn't that happen to you?
Yeah, I got stuck on a paddle boat once, but who hasn't? As I drifted off to sea, never to be seen by my loved ones again. I think that's happened to everybody at some point. Won't it be nice to do a full show where we don't have to scrutinize any political debates?
No, I kind of like it.
That was almost the... When the show was over, I was driving home and I thought, I don't remember talking about anything for the last 4 hours other than the debate from the other night.
I know, I was listening to you on the second half of the show yesterday, and that is all it was. But can I tell you something? That's all anybody was talking about yesterday.
That's kind of true.
At any office, at any home.
The beauty of this is, and I know people listening can't see this, but you know, we have a device that tells us what people are texting throughout the show. That's the beauty of the texting, is that it's so spontaneous, it's so up to the second. And Kristen McQuarrie, I think, would be the first to tell you that she writes about politics, but her slant is definitely to the right. She's a Republican,
right?
So as soon as we had Kristen on, almost all the texts, not all the texts, are saying, oh, sure, bring in a writer who supports the left so that everybody on the show is coming at it from the left. But Kristen will tell you she's a right-wing person. She is. That's just, she is.
She leans right.
So that was very interesting to watch the text. The more that she was on and the more we discussed the debate, and she was very critical of Donald Trump and what he did wrong. We did talk about the things that Hillary Clinton did wrong. There weren't as many things to discuss because people said, oh, you spent 10 minutes talking about Donald Trump's mistakes and 1 minute talking about Hillary Clinton's mistakes.
She didn't make too many.
She really didn't, in our opinion.
Exactly.
There's other people who will tell you otherwise.
And I never, ever thought I would say this, but I really would wish people would go back to posting pictures of food on their Facebook pages.
It's friendlier.
It is friendlier.
It's far, far friendlier. Yeah. All right. Now, this story came about yesterday, and I thought about this so much last night. It was very sad on Sunday to find out that Jose Fernandez, a very young pitcher on the Florida Marlins, died in a boating accident. That's just sad no matter how you look at it. There's nothing good about it. It's just sad. A story came out yesterday. A man named Steve Delvecchio wrote a story talking about how several members of the Florida Marlins, and they loved this guy. Everybody who knew this guy loved this guy.
I didn't know much about him. I'm a Sox fan. I'm not a huge baseball fan, which you are.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that much of him, but I did some Googling and watched some videos. He was so proud of his grandma seeing him play.
Yeah.
He seemed like a really sweet, nice guy and quite the talent.
Oh, no doubt about it. He was one of the premier pitchers in baseball. He really was. The story came out yesterday about how several members of the team turned Jose Fernandez's invitation down to join him on the boat. The night before, he was saying to all the Marlin players, hey, I'm going out with some friends on this boat. Come with me. And one by one, for various reasons, they said no. But think about the double agony. Number one, you lose a friend, a guy that's your teammate and your pal, and he's no longer with us, and that's tragic. But think about the extra side note of knowing that very easily could have been you, that split second decision of saying, you know what, I appreciate the invitation, but it's a little early for me. I'm just going to stick around. I'm going to stay at the hotel. But thanks for asking. Saved some lives, really.
Survivor guilt is what that's called.
That's it. That is.
I totally get it.
Yeah, it is. I think it is. It's survivor guilt in a weird way, isn't it? But wouldn't that haunt you? I mean,
yes.
It would, wouldn't it? I think I've told you this. I know I've told you this. A couple years ago on the last day of summer vacation, one of my daughter Kylie's best friends, because it was the last day of summer vacation, invited her to go to the beach. And she turned him down. And he kept texting saying, hey, it's the last day of summer. Please come to the beach. Got a couple of friends here. We're having a good time. And Kylie said, I got too much to do. School starting tomorrow. Thanks for the invitation. I can't do it. Tristan drowned that day. He hit his head on a rock in Wilmette, and he drowned. And Kylie, for the longest time, said, what if I was there? I mean, just a split second, a little different thing here, a little different thing there. He might still be alive.
Or she might be dead.
Or, I know. I thought about that, too.
You know, you can't predict what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Stevie Ray Vaughan helicopter thing from Alpine Valley. Was it Eric Clapton who was supposed to get on there and there wasn't a seat? Was one of the Buddy Guy or Jimmy Vaughan, his brother, but there was someone that was supposed to get on that plane or a helicopter, but there wasn't an extra seat. I mean, I don't think you can change what is about to happen, can you?
Remember the story of the guy on September 11th who he was supposed to be on one of the flights and his travel agent messed up the ticket and he was complaining to that he was on the phone that day saying, now I'm stuck because of your mistake. And it was one of the planes that crashed into the tower. There's stories like that that you just think, boy, sometimes the fates work for you. Sometimes they work against you. But I mean, my heart goes out to these Marlins players regardless. They lost a friend. And, baseball treated this guy so well. I told you almost every team hung a jersey, their own jersey. All the players on the Marlins yesterday, that was their first day back. Monday was their first day back. They didn't play Sunday, the day he died. But all the players on the Marlins all wore his name and his number on their jersey that day. They did this emotional ceremony for him. And then the first guy up after the ceremony, a guy who doesn't hit home runs, hit a home run and the place went nuts. It is. No doubt about it. All right. We've got a full show for you. All kinds of stuff. We're thrilled that you're listening. If you want to jump in, you know how to reach us. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Blackhawks.
Yeah, the Blackhawks. You were saying that will be a gate game, I think. Who's got time to say great? We were telling you the sad story about this pitcher on the Florida Marlins, Jose Fernandez, who died in a boating accident. 24 years old.
Jeez.
And how his teammates are recanting the story about how the night before, several of them were asked if they wanted to join him on the boat. For various reasons, they all said no. But it's one of those situations where you realize just that quick split-second decision, somebody invites you somewhere.
Difference between life and death.
In this case, it was. In all these guys' cases.
Eric's on the line. Hi, Eric.
Good morning, Bill and Wendy. I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
And I guess this boils down to the saying that you shall know neither the day nor the hour. But
yeah.
I had a deceased friend who was scheduled to go on a skydiving trip way out in the western suburbs. And they had called like the day before he was scheduled to go up and said, you know what, can you postpone it until next week? We overbooked it or something. He said, yeah, sure, no problem. And it's a good thing he did because the plane crashed and everybody aboard was killed in this skydiving accident. And the ironic thing is he was one of my best friends, and this was, the skydiving accident was probably 10 years before he passed. And he had told me literally a week before he died that he goes, I'm trying to do everything I can do to stay as healthy as I can. I've got a daughter now, a family, and I want to be around her, and I've had a lot of untimely death in my family. And a week later, he got killed in a car accident through no fault of his own.
Ugh.
And he was 53 when he died, and he had outlived all his siblings, and everybody in his family died just a freakish, untimely death, and he knew it was his turn.
Can't predict it.
No, it's impossible.
I know, but it just, he had that conversation with me, and I said, oh, Bob, you're worrying too much, and he goes, no, I just have this feeling, and sure enough, a week later, he got killed in a car accident.
Very sad, Eric.
So now that I've uplifted everybody in the radio.
Yeah, really.
Right, it worked.
Yes.
It worked. Thank you,
Eric.
Well,
sorry about that. Thank you for calling.
Doesn't everybody everybody knows a story similar to that, don't you think?
Yeah.
I remember my mom, when we were kids, would tell us a story. My mom was a dance teacher, but before she was a dance teacher, she was a model for a couple of years. And there was an agent who she had dinner with who was trying to book her on a job. And during this dinner, this agent was telling her through most of the dinner how he has the option of flying commercial flights, but he chooses to take real small aircraft. He doesn't like the commercial flights. And that night, when he was flying back to whatever city he lived in, he died in a small aircraft. And she said forever, she just kept thinking that about that conversation, like, But it's so much, it's safer to take a regular flight. Now, I just prefer this a lot more.
Sophomore year in high school, three of my friends were killed in a plane crash. They were going with a couple of family members to Florida. They were flying to Florida. A doctor owned the plane. He had flown it all the time. And my friend Mary had never flown before. Everybody else had. And she's like, oh, I'm so excited to go to Florida, but I'm kind of scared. And we're like, don't worry about it. I mean, they fly all the time. The plane went down in Kankakee. It didn't even make it that far. All perished. And then you question things, but you can't think about it. You just go on until you're not going on anymore.
There was a time... Boy, this is like, let's see who's got the most gruesome story.
I know, really. Gather around, everyone.
I'm almost reluctant to say this because it's awful. As you know, I was fortunate growing up as a kid. We had season tickets to both the Cubs and the White Sox. And we took it full advantage and went to tons of White Sox games, tons of Cubs games. So within, I think, 2 years or possibly three, the Yankees catcher Thurman Munson was in Chicago. The Yankees were playing the White Sox, and I saw his last game. He died in an airplane crash, a private airplane crash. About a year or two later, there was an outfielder. I want to say at the time he was with the California Angels. His name was Lyman Bostock. He was playing in town against the White Sox and went to see a woman in Indiana and got shot and killed. I saw his last game. So in both of those cases, you say to yourself, well, I guess you could say this about almost any time somebody dies in a weird, freaky way. If only this had happened differently, if only that had happened differently, they would still be alive. If he hadn't have gone to see this woman in Indiana, he'd still be alive. If Thurman Munson had flown with the team instead of his own private aircraft, he would have still been alive. I mean, I know you can't look at it like that.
No, because what if,
you know. A series of crossroads, no matter what you do, right?
Yeah, maybe he wouldn't have gotten shot if he didn't go to Indiana.
Right.
But he would have gotten in a car accident here.
Yeah, I
just feel like when your number's up, it's up, you don't have much control over it.
What's the there's a movie like that or a series of movies with teenagers who escape death and then no matter what they do, no matter where they are, death finds them. Did you ever see those movies?
No, but I want to see them.
I just remember one of them dies in a tanning bed accident, which rarely happens in real life.
Well, ultimately, the tanning bed will kill you. Skin cancer,
will.
You're not supposed to really be doing it.
I hate to admit it. It's true.
But she got stuck in it. That is the worst way.
Yeah, the whole point of these movies is to show you these kids that somehow escape death, and then no matter what they do, death comes to try to find them. There's like three or four of them, each one more grotesque than the last.
All right, well,
you've never seen those?
No, I gotta figure out what movie that is. It sounds very familiar to me.
They're like 15 or 20 years old. I saw the first one in a theater, and I didn't need to see the next two, but they were always on cable.
Final Destination?
Yeah,
thank you, Texter.
Final
and another texter says, can we please stop with this stuff?
I feel guilty. I'm sorry. This is it's a terrible way to... I'm glad the show hasn't started yet.
No. The good news is we can definitely top this when we come back.
with slightly happier news?
And a guest from Chicago Med.
Oh,
so there
excellent.
You have it.
All right.
We're staying alive, Bill. Unlike the open of the show.
Right. Much happier topics now, starting now.
Dr. Downer,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's Bill, it's Wendy, and in the studio with us right now from Chicago PD, Marina Squarciati. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you.
Enjoying the rainy weather?
I do. I mean, we were just talking about how it's so nice when you don't have to go anywhere when it's raining. But if you have things to do, if you have a life, then it kind of sucks.
Right. It does kind of suck. You have a busy day today, or are you just coming to see us?
Yeah, it's our second episode today, and the first episode started off with our, you know, on the season finale last year, our main guy killed someone, so...
And we didn't know who.
Yeah. No, we knew who, we just didn't know actually if he killed someone or not, and you found in the first episode, probably did. So, like, it's just, like, a really great start, and I'm excited, so we're just kind of going around talking about tonight's episode, which is equally exciting, so yeah.
How many seasons has this been on?
This is 4.
Congratulations.
Thank you. For a woman who kept her day job, season 1, because I was like, I don't know if it's going to go. I'm really excited. Yeah.
You really did, right? What was the day job at the time?
It was a paralegal. Yes, I did. Yeah.
So you did them simultaneously. You paralegaled in the daytime. And
yeah. No, I worked remotely because my job was in New York. But yeah, my job was really kind to me because they knew, like, life of an actor. Like, sometimes I'd be like, I'm never coming back. And like 2 days later, I'm like, it didn't work out. Right. Here I am.
Do they still call you in at crunch time if there's a busy season? Do they go, Marina, just for a couple days?
No, unfortunately. My whole team left, but I would love to. It was called Simpson, Thatcher, and Bartlett was the firm, and I loved it so much. I had a really good time.
And so why, I mean, you've been trying to act. What was your debut on television?
I feel like I've been not trying. I feel like I've been doing it. You're kind of doing it. Exactly. Know about it. No, I'm kidding.
No, but your debut, what, Law and Order? Criminal Intent?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I like to think that Dick Wolf was kind of grooming me from afar. He's like, that one's going to be a star. She just doesn't know it yet.
He's become one of the top employers in the state of Illinois.
I know, right?
Everybody working has him to thank.
Right.
He's done
a
nice job.
I think it's a game when you go to a Broadway show to, like, look, Law & Order SVU, Law & Order Criminal Intent, Law & Order, like, just to see, make sure everyone's hit all the resumes. It's like a Law & Order drinking game.
That would be fun. Yeah, exactly. We'd all be wasted.
Yeah, yeah. Early jobs, and I don't know if this is true. It's on the internet. It might or might not be.
If it's on Wikipedia, it's wrong.
The Nutcracker?
No, I was a ballerina for many years. Yeah,
but
yeah.
You were not in. Were you in the Macaulay Culkin version of the Nutcracker?
I was studying at the School of American Ballet, SAB, and they like cast out of that. And so yes, I was a. What was I? You know those little people under the skirts, the Paul Chanels?
Yes.
I was a Paul Chanel. I was a boy because I was tall.
Oh.
Which was really terrible. Oh. Being tall in ballet when you're young is really, it's a nightmare. Yeah. And then I was also a mouse.
Oh.
Oh, no, I was a soldier. I was a soldier, a toy soldier. But I performed at Lincoln Center many years in Sleeping Beauty, too. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think we should ask you, what can't you do?
Oh, there's really not anything I can't. I mean,
can
I can
cook?
Do everything. Yeah. No, actually, I bake. I bake.
I prefer cooking over baking.
I'm sorry.
Baking, you have to follow the recipe precisely.
Exactly
there is
right.
No room for improv.
That's why I like it. It's like I can't screw this up because I've got everything written down. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you do a show
I'm
like...
I'm really good at ordering in, though.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a
specialty.
It's a talent.
That takes work. When you have abilities like this, do you ever say to the producers, hey, if you ever want to work something in, I've got this talent or ability.
Yes.
Does that happen?
So I was raised by a single mom, and she, I had a nanny who was like full-time. Like her name was Maria Olia Tavares, and she like, we lived in the same room for 14 years. Like this woman is like my soul. And so my mother doesn't speak any Spanish, and Oliva doesn't speak any English, so I've been translating my whole life still to this day, and I'm like, you guys, I speak Spanish better than John Seda. I'm really sorry, John Seda, but I do speak Spanish better than you, even though you're Latin and I'm not.
Yeah.
And they still haven't used it.
Oh.
They told me this year that I might get 3 sentences in Spanish.
That's
so it's
going to
be like, hola, me llamo Marina, ciao. I mean, like, I don't even know what I'm going to say.
What if in that same scene you also ballet danced and baked something? They would just take care of everything in one
quick
scene.
Yeah, those are all my strengths, and then I'd have nothing else to give to the world.
So 4 seasons doing it, when you're walking around town, is it cool that people recognize you now?
Yeah, it is cool. Like, it's really fun. I was telling someone that I was on the bus yesterday going to, like, a comedy show, and this girl, like, completely freaked out and tweeted me when she got off the bus. Like, I couldn't say hi to you. But I find that that's not mostly the case in Chicago. Most people are really friendly, and they come up, and they say hi, and it's lovely. Like, you're acknowledged, and it's sweet. Unless it's creepy, and then it's awkward.
And I bet it is creepy sometimes.
Yeah. You know, at night, if a gentleman approaches you and like, I'm your biggest fan, it gets a little weird. But no, generally it's lovely. The city like has embraced us and is so kind. And one of my favorite sandwich places is JP Graziano's. And like, I don't know if you've ever been.
No,
but it's
where
awesome.
Is that?
It's Peoria and Halstead. No, mm-hmm. Peoria and Randolph. Yeah, that's right. And they make a great sandwich, and they're always asking me, like, about the show. And it's just so nice. Like, I just feel like it's a neighborhood, you know? It's great.
Do you think part of it, Marina, is in New York and Los Angeles, they might be a little more jaded as to filming going on because they're so used to it. But in Chicago, it's kind of a novelty for
sure,
us.
Sure. I think that's absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah. You're not used to... You know, I actually find that people in Chicago are like, you film here? You're here?
Well, we're surprised
like,
about
yeah,
that.
I know. I'm like, yeah, we're here. Really? Like,
a lot of shows based out of Chicago, they do some of the shots in Chicago, but it's not.
Like Shameless, I think. Like they do like exteriors here. Yeah, no, right. We're here 10 months out of the year, all the winter.
The Bob Newhart show wasn't from here. The movie Chicago wasn't here. They did that in Toronto.
Really? Yeah, a lot of I think it's so important that we film it here. It is a different feel. When you're in Toronto, you can fake it as much as you want, but it's Toronto. Chicago has... We use all corners of the city, which I think is awesome. Like, we go north, south, east, west, and it's awesome to see all these places that you wouldn't normally see. It's awesome to, like, meet people from different places that you wouldn't normally go. And I think it shows. I think that's part of the reason the show is so successful, because we show Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd love to see that. I
didn't show it off well, too, by the way. It looks really good on television.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It doesn't add 10 pounds, you'd think, but it looks
the city looks thin and trim.
It just adds an Italian sausage.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really all it adds.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Marina Squarciati in the studio with us, and she is on Chicago PD. The season premiere was last Wednesday, but tonight, more exciting stuff happening, 9 p.m.
Yeah, and if NBC. You want a live tweet with me, it's Marina SQU during the show, and I will respond.
Look at that.
You do that during the show.
Yeah, yeah, all the time. I like to say I respond to you unless you're creepy, and then I don't.
Clean up your act,
clean
creeps.
Up your act.
Come on.
It's Bill and Wendy, and we're here with Marina Squarciati, who plays Officer Kim Burgess on Chicago PD. Last Wednesday night, the debut. Make sure you see it tonight. Episode 2 is just as exciting on NBC.
Yeah.
And now with all this real life stuff going on in Chicago, I hate that we're in the news for thousands of murders.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be on the show? Do
for
you
sure.
address that? I don't even know tactfully how to talk about
no,
it.
No, I know. It's tough. You know, it's like you're on a show. It's a show. It's not real life. But we're also like we're in it, right? You can't avoid it. And I think it would be a mistake to avoid it. And the showrunner has sort of decided, and you know, along with Dick Wolf, that we're going to tackle it. And it's not going to be every episode. You know, this is also, it's also, you know, we want some lighter issues, but I think it's so important. Like, we're having a real problem here with the cops and the citizens of the city. So let's tackle it. And I think we do a good job of that. We don't always touch the third rail, but we're doing our best. Yeah.
He's always been kind of a proponent of storylines that
ripped
are kind
from
of
the
ripped from the day's
totally,
headlines.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't that play into the show? You need it to almost, don't
yeah,
you?
I think also, but it's dangerous. You know, it's a dangerous, touchy subject. People are really, emotions are really high. And they're not shying away from that, even though it's so touchy. But yeah, still ripped from the headlines.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And you need to talk about it because there needs to be communication between police officers and the citizens. We have to talk about it or we forget about it.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, I think that's smart.
You graduated from Northwestern.
Yes.
What do you miss most about Evanston, or do you get there every once in a while?
I don't miss Evanston so much. I loved it, but I just miss not working and having parties every day. Is that wrong?
Real Wait, life is
I
not
mean,
fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I always
You're
think,
a TV star. That's what you get to do every yeah, once in a while,
no,
though.
No, not at all. We
no?
work. I think it is a lovely job, and we are blessed to have it for
yeah.
sure. But I do. It is. I don't. I think people don't realize how hard and how long we work.
We
I mean,
don't.
These are 14 and 16 hour days.
Constantly learning scripts. That's nonstop.
You know, that's actually not the hard part. It's more just your energy, and you work Friday, so that's like 3 a.m. onto a you know a Saturday. So it's
Friday.
A Friday. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You, it's combined.
Yeah, you're yeah. Working. It's one day. Yeah.
Oh, God.
And then you just sleep the rest of Saturday, and you have Sunday to do your laundry.
Oh.
So yeah. So
glamorous life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's there are glamorous parts, and it's like fun talking to you guys and getting to do press today for our show tonight.
Good.
But it's hard.
Sure.
You know, it's a hard life. But it's a good life.
And I know you got to get out of here.
Yes.
You have tons of interviews. It was a pleasure seeing you again. There's Chicago PD. That's where you can find Marina Squarciati. Chicago Fire, Chicago Med, Chicago Justice soon to be. And I think Chicago Bed Bugs are going to...
Is that coming?
Yes, because they just found bed bugs on the Red Line. So perhaps
I take
could...
the Red Line. I literally took the Red Line to Chicago yesterday. I'm out.
Are you itching?
I'm out.
They took the seat out. They took the car out of commission, and they have an exterminator looking at
it. How did they find it, though?
I don't know. We're going to explore that. I know you have to go, so maybe listen on your way.
Listen, tweet me, because I need this info.
Where do we follow you on Twitter?
Marina SQU, and I just started Snapchat, which is Marina SQU. I'm literally a baby Snapchatter. I've done it twice, but I'm looking for a third snap, so worry not.
Third one's the charm.
Thanks,
Marina.
Best of luck.
Great
we'll
see
you tonight.
Take care, everybody.
Channel 5, it's 9 p.m., Chicago PD. Look for Marina Squarciati, Officer Kim Burgess. You heard about these bed bugs?
Yeah, a little bit. What do you know? What are they saying?
Chicago Transit Authority pulled one of the rail cars on the Red Line after a commuter reported finding bed bugs on one of the seats, and evidently it was completely infested. User on the social media platform Reddit with the screen name UserI posted photos, wrote about discovering the pest while riding the Red Line toward the loop between 8:45 a.m. and 9 a.m. this past Monday.
Oh, great.
Here's the quote. Got on the train this morning to go to work and was excited to see an empty seat. Why was it empty?
Mm-hmm.
I sit down next to three other people on the long six-seater section of the Red Line car. About a minute later, I notice a small, clear, big thing crawling on me. I flick it off. Moments later, I see two of the bugs crawling on me. So I get up to look at the seat, and it is infested with them. I announce it to my fellow commuters. Everyone on the row gets up, looks around, brushes themselves off. Chicago has made headlines for being
the
one
worst bedbug city in America. They said even though New York gets itchy now. They have the reputation. Experts in this sort of thing say that it's actually our city, Chicago, that has the worst infestation.
The Reddit user reported seeing more than, quote, 30 small white bugs crawling around a row of six seats. Now, I thought they were dark. Is that just after they get your blood?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know that I've ever seen one.
I haven't, and knock on Formica, I don't want to.
Right.
CTA was alerted to the bugs on the train by a commuter. That individual was also able to provide the number of the rail car, which is very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
See something, say something, mm-hmm. and write the train number down.
Mm-hmm.
In these kinds of situations, CTA says once they're notified, the rail car is immediately pulled from service for treatment.
Good.
And that was the case on Monday. After a car is pulled from service, exterminators are called, and they determine if there is a pest problem. I think if you see a bunch of 30 bugs walking around,
right.
even if no bugs are found, the car is still fumigated. The interior is scrubbed from top to bottom. And they were unsure as to how long it takes for one of its 1,400 cars to be inspected, cleaned, and then put back into service after a report of a pest infestation.
Great.
Do you remember there were gnats in the studio the other day?
I do. Yeah, just for the one day, though, for some weird reason. I don't think I've seen them before or since.
I'm wondering if they're coming from me. Not that I'm Pigpen from the Snoopy cartoon.
From Peanuts?
Yeah. Because we have fruit flies at home.
Yeah.
And it
even this time of year? Because this isn't their season, is it?
Well, if you have fruit on your counter.
Is that year-round? Because I always remember seeing them like in the early spring. I don't remember seeing them this time of year.
I don't know how to get rid of fruit flies. I got to call Alvin, my exterminator. But we have a fruit basket, and that's where
rich people. Listen to you with the fruit basket. Rub it in our faces. Go ahead.
And they're hanging around, and I'm thinking, what if they like are hitching a ride on me, and I'm the one who brought them in the studio?
I wouldn't be shocked.
I would be shocked.
you just implicated
yourself. But I didn't know if that happens, and I didn't know if anybody else had any fruit flies going on. And I looked on Pinterest and everywhere else. On how to get rid of them, you make a fruit fly trap, which is...
How small would that be?
Well,
it's like
no.
a mouse trap, but it's 1 millimeter of the size.
It's easy
it's
to
not
make.
For one.
It's really hard to free them once they're caught
yes.
in it. You have to lift the little thing off their leg.
Well, you want
to
be humane. That's the
you
thing.
You take a jar, like an empty mayonnaise jar,
right.
and you put apple cider vinegar in it and a little touch of dish soap. And then if you have fruit flies, they flock to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they get stuck in it, they die.
Fruit flies don't flock.
Or they fly into it, whatever. And then you dump it and do it again, and all of a sudden, they're gone.
Oh.
So you capture them all, and then they can't have baby fruit flies.
Oh, all right.
And also in your drain, they can be in your drain, because if you leave dishes in your sink that have food on them, which we don't. Jim is the dishwasher. He puts them right in the dishwasher.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're supposed to take bleach and pour it down your drain.
Oh, that would make perfect sense.
But they're not here anymore.
No, it was a one-day infestation. Just the one day.
And there were like two of them.
Yeah, but they were relentless. They were fearless.
I think I ate one because it was hanging around the microphone. Did you? I saw you swatting. I thought,
I know.
What is Bill seeing?
I know it looked like I was having some sort of a fit, but it was, you know, it was that little bug that I couldn't get rid of. All right, so beware if you're on. It's the red line only. It's the
and
red
they
line
took
only.
The car off, but imagine that.
Oh, what's scarier than a bed bug with a transfer? I mean, that would be petrifying to see something like that. They're very economical, Wendy.
Oh, it might have been body lice you're saying now, Lise?
Oh, thank God.
Where are you getting this information? A caller said that.
Yeah.
See, because the white is what kind of confuses me, because I thought bed bugs were flat and brown, but maybe after they feast on your blood, they turn
that
color.
They get some color. That could be.
I am just
or
standing
tanning
in
beds.
My...
Maybe they're tanning, which isn't safe. Bed bugs, if you're listening.
I don't even like sitting in a movie theater. I don't like sitting on a plane. I'm getting a giant body bubble for myself.
That's your best bet.
Just wrap yourself in saran wrap
before you sit on things.
Yeah,
that's the safest
thing
to do. All right, so beware, city. The bed bugs are upon us. Once they get the red line, Wendy, the whole train system's going down. You know that. That's how they do it. Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Every other Wednesday, Our friend Dane joins us, and we talk about the world of food. He's here right now. Hi, Dane.
It is a world. I would think the food universe, Bill. Let's food expand universe. It beyond, especially with the Zodiac. You know, did you hear about that, guys?
The Zodiac Killer?
No, that NASA changed the Zodiac signs. The Zodiac Killer.
Today's show started on a sad note, and we won't let it go weird reason, Dana. It's nothing to do with you.
It's part of our Serial Killer Wednesdays.
Right. They changed the Zodiac signs? No, I didn't hear of this.
Well, let's just not get hung up in the weeds. Well, it's on the news.
All right, I'll look it up.
You know, but as things change around the world, one thing remains the same, and I think it's a worldwide and global love and appreciation for dumplings.
Dumplings, this right? has to be, yes.
And when
Why do you think when people think you're cute, you say, oh, my little dumpling, because we love dumplings.
That's it.
That's the next. Right, it's not like, geez, did you see that guy? What a dumpling.
No, it's a good thing.
Didn't Blondie and Dagwood have a child named Baby Dumpling? They did, remember?
They at least one.
At least one, maybe two.
Thanks, Gramps.
You're welcome. More references from the 1930s after this.
after the serial killer
yes.
features.
Yeah.
So we all know about the, you know, Bacon Fest. You know, bacon has got this whole just kind of everyone's just crazy about bacon. And
yeah.
And what Seth Zurer does is he kind of has his hand on the pulse of the taste buds of America. And when there is something, when there's kind of a cry, a need out there in the public for a festival, a celebration to go along with a beloved food, mm-hmm. he's there to create that, right? And then sell tickets and have us show up.
I would love to meet him someday. That's my dream.
Well, here's the thing.
Wishes do come true, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Like any great inventor, you know, Thomas Edison light bulb, did he stop there? No. He invented mm-hmm. other things like the electric razor or something like that, mm-hmm. right? And Seth has done the same thing, bored with all of his success, was laying there one day and said to himself, bacon, sure, that's great. People
bacon
love it.
Schmaken.
Yeah, let's do something different. And he started Dumpling Fest. Mm-hmm. Now, and you think to yourself, you're thinking, geez, come on, Dumpling Fest, what can you do with that? Well, what you do is you combine it with 80s and 90s hip-hop music,
mm-hmm.
and you create an event called Rapper's Delight. And Seth is in the studio.
Seth's what? There. Seth, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks
nice
for having
to see
me, Wendy.
You.
You're a food genius.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
What about
I saw
Zodiac Killer Fest.
No, that's actually next year. Next year, we're going to work on some other non-food themes. But this year, I saw a dumpling-shaped hole in the world.
Yeah.
And I decided to fill it with a dumpling festival.
Based on what Dane just said, the combination of that sort of food and that sort of music is very intriguing. How did that come together?
Well, I focus on things that I love mm-hmm. when I'm coming up with festivals. So
good
when,
place
for
to
the
start.
First one, it was bacon. I love bacon. I think everyone loves bacon. For this one, it's dumplings and something else that I love that I have a childhood connection to, which is 80s and 90s hip hop.
Yeah.
And I sort of have a fantasy in my mind about what could happen at Dumpling Fest that will have an incredible backbeat of De La Soul or Boogie Down Productions, and people will be eating dumplings from all over the world, whether it's a pierogi from Poland or shumai or potstickers or Vietnamese dumplings or empanadas from South America, or even, I would say, you know, ravioli, tortelloni. There is a global dumpling culture that exists that shows off the variety of what we have in the world, and that, to me, was super exciting that I could go to an event, eat a bunch of dumplings, shake a leg, and bust a move, and do some hip-hop dancing, and that's what we're going to do on October 15th at Ace Bounce.
At where?
It's a new ping-pong bar downtown called Ace Bounce.
Oh, Bill, you got to go.
So
you can play ping-pong with dumplings.
That's right.
That's my goal.
Dumplings, hip-hop, ping-pong, great chefs from some of Chicago's best restaurants, about 15, 16 different restaurants serving wildly creative dumplings.
Who writes the book on the rules? Because, you know, there's that traditional image that I have in my mind of a dumpling, and it doesn't span, you know, globally like you suggested. So did you have to sit there and write them all down, or is there some, like, old book in a cave somewhere that says, like, this qualifies as a dumpling?
Well, I mean, I think from a definition standpoint, I would say you think about the shape. It's anything doughy that's round and enclosed.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes you all the way from matzo balls to pan-fried pot stickers to gnocchi to ravioli.
Gnocchi.
So
see,
everything
you said it like
doughy.
I say it, and you guys all criticize
me. We laugh because it's you, but
it's
I don't
gnocchi.
Laugh when Seth says it at all.
Thank you, Bill.
I think you're
but it's they're little.
I think you're not funny.
A dumpling is wrapped up in dough, and there's a present in the middle. It's like a little present of goodness.
A hidden delight.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's what it is. So.
Yeah, exactly.
But how strange is it that all throughout the world, people, cultures had their own invention, and really think about it, they're all very, very similar.
Yeah, right. It's one of those great stories about how human culture is one culture, that we're all related to one another, and we're all brothers and sisters, at least as far as dumplings are concerned.
Well, you mentioned, you know, empanadas, pierogies, and I think the different cultures are represented there. And in studio, I think, is a great example of some of the great stuff that is going to be out at Dumpling Fest. Is you've got Saigon Sisters, you've got Mary Aragoni, she's out there, and they have done awesome. Started at the Chicago French Market, now they've got Bang Chop Thai Kitchen, and we've got Mary in studio along with their executive chef Kevin Marquardt, and you guys are going to be bringing it on that day.
Yep.
What are you bringing?
We're bringing, and we have a little sample for you here. We're doing a dumpling, but with lamb and jackfruit. So
and like what?
Jackfruit.
What is that?
Jackfruit is a wonder fruit. It's from Southeast Asia. It has like a texture of artichokes when it's young.
Yum.
But it's also a fruit. You can use it for vegetarian people when you marinate it, like in barbecue. It has a texture like barbecue.
What flavor-wise, what are we thinking? What's it comparable to?
A component is sweet, sour, tart, and a little bitter. And we use fish sauce dressing, and we use sugar and lime, garlic,
oh, wow,
ginger,
that
lemongrass, a lot of herbs, a lot of flavor. So yeah. So we're going to try to put all of that into the little dumpling, and we're going to use very unique ingredients that people don't tend to know about.
All the work that goes into making a little tiny dumpling that, you know, you devour in two bites.
Right.
Wow.
The dumpling Mary handed us, she said she started making in January, just finished it this morning. That's how much work goes into each dumpling.
Kevin did.
Oh, Kevin
put
thank
that
you
together.
For that. So nice of you. So nice of you.
Yeah, thank you.
So when you're putting together various flavors, like you mentioned, lamb and jackfruit, those are two flavors that normally you wouldn't even think of in the same sentence. What's the thought process behind that? What are you going for?
Well, I'll let Kevin answer that because he came up with that idea.
Kevin, that's your idea?
Yeah, so I decided to go with lamb. You know, there's a lot of different cultures that can be influenced. And so though we do traditional Vietnamese cuisine,
yeah,
you can take something like lamb that's not really used too much in Vietnamese
usually
cuisine.
Normally Greek, right? Is that lamb usually a Greek
food? You know, they use some goat in Vietnam as well, but you won't see lamb too much. So we'll take, you know, something like a Greek lamb with black pepper. There's a lot of black pepper as well in Vietnam.
Yeah.
So we'll take those influences and then add the garlic chives and ginger and lemongrass and blend all that together. And then we'll take a traditional Nak Cham sauce, which is fish sauce and lime juice. And then we'll add a lot of fresh ginger and ginger juice to that, and you know, it will really elevate it.
Oh, it sounds so good.
It smells so good.
Yeah.
And tell us more about Dumpling Fest.
Well, no. So, Mary, so tell a little bit about Saigon Sisters. Obviously,
You're
going to be out there on the 15th with your unique flavors. But for people that want to visit you on a regular basis at the places?
Sure. We have four locations. We started at the French Market. We have a place in Northwestern Memorial Hospital. And then at 567 West Lake, that's kind of like our commissary and our main place where we do dinner. Mm-hmm. And that we elevated with interesting ingredients for dinner, and we have a chef on hand. And then we just open a
Is that you, Kevin?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Kevin just joined us 2 weeks ago. He's doing a great job.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. And then we also have a Thai cuisine. Like right in one block. So we're introducing Southeast Asian cuisine to Chicago.
Oh, that sounds so good.
You can hit all the spots.
And Seth, for the other restaurants that are going to be represented, if you want to name off a couple that are going to be there, because we do have two tickets. It is sold out at this point. It is something for people to aspire to do next year, except for the winner. So we got two tickets. Who are they going to see on the 15th?
So covering the Italian angle on dumplings, we have Osteria Lange, which is this incredible Italian restaurant in Logan Square. Ace Bounce, who's hosting the event, is also going to be fielding a chef. Their chef, Rick Gresh, who's been in a bunch of different kitchens across town for the last decade, is going to be there. And Lost Lake, which is a cool tiki bar also in Logan Square. Paul McGee is going to be there. He's going to do a tiki cocktail, and they'll serve a paired dumpling as well. We'll have beer from Goose Island. It's gonna be a good time. I wish we weren't, on the one hand I'm happy we're sold out. On the other hand, I want as many people as possible to experience my vision for dumpling nirvana.
Two people are gonna experience it, as well as you've got a DJ and Biz Marquee over the loudspeaker. So
exactly.
But it shows people that for next year, plan a little bit ahead. Normally tickets go for how much for this?
So the tickets this year are $50.
They are.
And it's all inclusive ticket price. You'll get to go from restaurant to restaurant at the event and taste the dumplings, and you'll get included ordered three beers and cocktails from the restaurants that are pairing cocktails. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you get to play some ping pong as well.
Bill, you just got your name written all over.
Yeah, come on out. I mean, we're hoping to grow the event. You know, Bacon Fest started out small. In our first event, we had about 100 people. We had about 10 chefs. And last year, we had about 4,500 guests and 8,000 pounds of bacon and 160 restaurants. So Dumpling Fest is a small event this year, but we hope to bring our vision to more people in the future.
It's Bill Leffen, it's Wendy Snyder, along with Dane Neal. A little while ago, Dane, we announced that we had two tickets to the sold-out Dumpling Fest. You can't get them anywhere.
Rapper's Delight.
Rapper's Delight, it's called, and we have a winner. Maura is our winner.
Yes.
I'm not positive where Maura's from.
The Chicago metro area.
That's all
she's
need to say.
She's from Aurora.
Right. But she's been to many places. Maura's traveled the world over.
Wait, and now Maura from Aurora?
Maura from Aurora.
I don't believe it.
Her friend Dora the Explorer also going with her.
I wonder if Dora from the Explorer is going to like visit her in Aurora.
Maybe, possibly. But you're our winner, Maura. Congratulations.
And hang on the line. We need to get your details, and Dane will set you up.
Yep.
And you have more people.
Well, there's...
You got peeps.
This is it. You know, and it's kind of an embarrassment of culinary and delicious food riches because there are so many things going on. There's almost not enough time to mention them all. So we won't. We'll just mention two.
All right.
And this one is coming up on, I think it's October 3rd. Right, it is the Triple X Wing Challenge. Jake Melnick's is hosting it. I've done some. You know, I'm not like a Joey Chestnut or a Kobayashi. You guys know that because you've never introduced
the competitive
me
eaters
as either one of those individuals, right?
Yeah.
I've done a couple things, and I've found that I've obviously don't have a hidden talent for it. You know, as far as eating a lot of things in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a weird thing. I like to enjoy things when I eat it. Instead of soaking them in a glass of water and shoving them down your throat.
That's why you come in last in all these eating competitions.
That's why you don't get the giant foam core check.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
So this is a little bit different. Certainly, you're encouraged to eat as many as you can in the 10 minutes allotted. But also, there is a, you know, kind of a prohibitive triple X hotness rating going in there, too. So it's kind of, you know... I don't know. It's a tough thing. There's a challenge built into it. So you got to eat as many as you can.
Yeah.
But it's their new Triple X. And we tried some on the air Friday. I didn't try them because I was afraid of like really knowing that I couldn't do it.
Right.
So this way I'm still positive and upbeat.
Right, sure.
And we had a couple people in the studio, including Sam Panionovich. He ate three almost. He almost died, right? The upside of it, of putting yourself, you're thinking, well, why would you do this, right? This
right.
seems like punishment, is that it's a charity event. And so I think it's $50 for every wing that gets eaten.
Correct. So
to the charity
For the winner of the
you got
the contest.
Win?
Yes, and
oh jeez,
yeah, it's going to be quite the throwdown.
Wow.
And where is this?
This is at Jake Melnick's, and we've got Tony Besiglia. He is in studio. He's the GM of Jake Melnick's, and you think, well, they're just creating, you know, torturous events. It's not the case. They have some of the best hot wings out there. Buffalo wings, regular wings that just have some great flavor profiles on them, too. So talk a little bit about the other things that people will get, because I guess throughout the entire event coming up on the 3rd, people who attend, half-price wings for everybody.
Oh, that's nice.
So we're doing half-price wings from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday night. And the actual event will kick off at 6:30. That'll be the 10-minute challenge. We've invited some of the local media. Dane's going to participate, which is great. And see how many they can do. And $50 for the winner for every wing they eat. So we may even have the record holder in house.
Oh wow, nice.
To kind of, you know, get you guys pumped.
Tony, I have a question for you. With this Triple X hot wing, is it best to just go through the motion and eat as quickly as possible? I'm not trying one.
I'm just saying,
are you thinking? I need to talk.
Okay.
But I mean, doesn't it take a while for the effect to kick in? So the key would be to eat them very quickly.
That would be one strategy. Absolutely.
See?
There is, well, like I said, we'll have the record holder there, so he may be able to share.
Ah.
Or he's actually one of the top eaters for us.
We're not competing against
no,
him, right?
He's just there to hang out. Yeah. So anyways, definitely the heat will be residual. So it'll build and it'll last and it'll hang out for a while.
Can I ask what's creating the heat, or is that a secret recipe that you can't
tell me? No, absolutely. We've got three peppers in this sauce.
Yeah.
We start with a...
What are the names? Do they have names like scorpion, poison pepper?
So we've got the Scotch bonnet habanero, which is pretty hot.
Yeah.
And then we have the ghost pepper.
Boo!
That's become
the boot jalo. That was the hottest pepper for a little while, but it was overtaken by the scorpion pepper.
Oh.
So the Trinidad scorpion pepper is in the sauce as well. So we've got those three, which make up the Triple X. The Carolina Reaper has recently overtaken.
Is this a roller coaster?
No, it's
it is not.
It's pretty crazy. It's a
monster truck.
Yeah, the Carolina Reaper just recently overtook the Scorpion Pepper a couple years ago. So,
in a fight to the death.
Yeah, they're just below weapons grade chemical weapons as far or pepper spray.
What's the best way once you've ingested, once you've eaten this? What's the best way to get your taste buds back to normal? What do you do?
You need some time, but
years of therapy.
Yeah.
What about milk? What about milk, cucumbers?
Lactic acid definitely helps. That's milk. Citric acid as well. Yeah. So we'll give people oranges a lot of times helps. Yeah.
You know how it is. You know, you're out at a gathering, you're caught up in the moment, and you sign something that I guess on the street is known as a waiver form. And when we talk about the three different really scary named peppers, Tony has a waiver form with. You brought it with. What does it say? Is there anything in there that...
They're not responsible in case you have some kind of a reaction.
Yeah, this, you know, our legal department helped us out with this, actually.
Yeah, they did.
And just it's full disclosure, I understand what I'm getting into is the long and short of it.
Oh.
And so I'm not holding you responsible for how I feel afterwards.
It is one thing to go ahead and create something that is, you know, not edible, right? To have people fail at. But that really wasn't the case. There's a lot of people out there that absolutely love super hot stuff. And so you guys really worked on the flavor to try to make, because you want to sell more than you just, you know, throw at us on that
day. I'm already salivating for some reason. Sure. I'm thinking about the hot peppers and my, you know, salivary glands are trying to protect me.
So well, supposedly it tastes good, right?
It tastes great. And I think that was really a big objective for us with the sauce. I've had hot food that...
Hot to be hot.
It's just so overwhelmingly and you don't even... You don't even enjoy.
Right.
So the flavor components here come from how we reconstitute the ghost chilies. They come in dried. We add them to a little orange juice to reconstitute them.
Oh, good.
There's layers of buffalo sauce that we add in. So we're really trying to find... We also char the habaneros. So it gives a nice smoky flavor to the sauce. So you're going to get flavor along with that experience. And the reason people do this... there's an endorphin release that happens after you eat food on this level.
So I'll look forward to that.
I call it the moment of clarity.
Is it from the capsaicin in the peppers?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then to cool down, you can just lick a volcano or something to get your tongue back to normal, right?
Absolutely. Actually, after the first couple, it's not as, you don't notice it as much.
You get Is that true? You build up an immunity to it?
Yeah, but then you'll feel it later, right? As it gradually kicks in. And you have to wear gloves when eating it because, you know, people are going to eat the wings and then they're going to like put their finger to their eye or something.
We don't require gloves, but we definitely have them available for those.
I would wear a
Hurt Locker suit is really what you need. Right. He mentioned the words weapon grade. Well, before we let you go, we know that this is going to be there. It is going to be an awesome time on the 3rd for a great cause and a lot of pain. But let people know where they can come and get, because you guys have a lot of different varieties of really just generally, you know, garden variety, great tasting wings.
Absolutely. So we're at 41 East Superior, Jake Melnick's Corner Tap. We do several different flavors, as you said. The poncho wings, definitely one of the favorites. That's actually a grilled wing. It has a garlic and cayenne pepper marinade. Mm.
It's so good.
I have to have them at least once a week, maybe twice a week, just for the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
But we do a traditional buffalo style. We're also known for the firecracker wings, which is more of a Thai chili sriracha sauce.
Still hot, not as hot as what you've described in the past.
The name might
be
a little bit deceiving. It's not over the top hot.
Oh, it's
definitely the firecracker has kind of got a sweet and spicy thing going on. So,
oh, good. Very, very
really,
good.
Really tasty wing. And we always do a wing of the month. So we'll feature something different every month for those who are our regular fans.
Nice.
Yep. We've got some here for you guys to enjoy throughout the rest of the program. Oh.
I love Jake Melnick's Corner Tap. It's a great place.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not eating hot wings, though. Sorry. I'm a big baby.
Oh, that's okay. No.
I've got plenty of ranch for you.
It'll work. No blue cheese?
It'll work. Blue cheese, too.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, so push it one more time so everybody knows what we're getting into and when.
It's October 3rd at Jake Melnick's, and from it's 6 till 7?
6 to 7 is the half-price wings, but we're going to actually kick off the eating contest from 6:30 to 6:40.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're there during 6 to 7, you will see the contest go on and be able to cheer our folks on.
It's going to be great.
Beautiful. Can't wait.
Thank
great
you,
to
Tom.
See you. Appreciate it, Tony.
Me.
Dane,
Absolutely.
Thanks very much.
You bet.
Thank you so much, Kim. When Steve Bertrand was in earlier, he played some audio of Donald Trump. I know a lot of people were commenting, except oddly enough, not Steve Bertrand, about Donald Trump sniffing at the debate.
Right.
Steve said he didn't even really notice it.
Yeah, a couple people yesterday said that they didn't hear it the way most of us heard it, but it was pretty prevalent throughout the debate. He had a little bit of a sniffle going.
I noticed it immediately. I told my husband, I'm like, if he doesn't stop this, I don't know if I'm going to be able to continue watching this. It was making me crazy.
I know. I couldn't focus on anything else but the sniffing at some point, which is sad, but whatever. And then when Steve played some audio earlier, he did sound like he had a bit of a cold. Our own Susan Berkus is live right now at the Bolingbrook Golf Club, and Donald Trump is expected to arrive at any moment. Susan, has he arrived yet?
No, he hasn't arrived, and the protesters pretty much in a pattern of booing people as they pull into the Bolingbrook golf course. That's where we're at right now.
Is it relatively peaceful?
You know, it is. I've spoken with some angry Trump supporters. They're kind of set over to the side. There's a whole area across from the Bolingbrook Golf Club set up for media and the protesters and Trump supporters. And it has been peaceful. A couple of the Trump supporters just not happy with the turnout here in terms of people against Donald Trump. And there are a few signs that are maybe with some swear words and the like.
It's a news story, Susan. You can read the signs.
No, don't
it's
listen
a news
to
story.
Bill. All right. So how many supporters would you say are there, pro-Trumpers? Ballpark.
I would say the camp is right in front of me. I would say about 20 to 30.
That's it?
That is it. And for everybody else, there have been a lot of local speakers, police everywhere, chaplains, suburban families against hate organized the whole thing. So by far, anti-Trump people are outnumbering the pro-Trump people.
Now, the pro-Trump people may have paid the $1,000 to have lunch with the Donald, and I believe it's $10,000 to get your picture taken with him.
Well, it goes all the way up to $250,000.
Wow.
And if you can pay that, then you get to sit with Donald Trump and special photo opportunities.
And what kind of food is it for that kind of money? I need to know what's on the menu before I put down $250,000.
I'll tell you what, I'm on the outside looking in. I have no idea. I do know they do have a nice restaurant.
Yes,
in
they do.
There. For everyday folks like us.
And we were there for the last stop of our Hometown Voices tour presented by Allstate.
That's right.
And there were a lot of protesters that day. We understood that. That's part of the thing when you do the Hometown Voices.
Well, I'm interested to see what happened. And as I mentioned, Steve Bertrand played some audio of him at the Polish-American rally earlier this morning. And he did sound like he's under the weather. And I'm wondering if he's going to say something like, yeah, I got a cold. But now since he gave Hillary so much grief about, you know, having pneumonia, will he even mention it?
Right. My guess would be no, because he took such a swipe at her stamina during the debate.
Yeah.
Well, that would be my best guess. But, of course, who knows?
But, Susan, if he does admit to having a cold, don't you think he'll admit to having the best cold that anyone's ever had?
And he's very proud of it.
Very proud of his cold.
Hey, Susan.
I think he will.
I know a lot of people. Susan Berkus is live, by the way, at the Bolingbrook Golf Club, awaiting the arrival of Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
You know, a lot of women, I guess men too, but mostly women, have a box of Kleenex in their car. Can you grab a box of Kleenex and offer it to him as he arrives?
Yes, I can do that. And I also have, I don't want to show any.
No, you can't. You probably shouldn't.
Don't do it.
I have all sorts of things that you know could help Donald with his sniffles, but they made it very clear out here that we're not going to get anywhere near Donald Trump and the Republican National Convention. They have just stated yesterday no media, so that's why we're kind of cordoned off across the street.
Any idea of specifically which topics he'll be addressing at today's speech? Do we know?
No, I don't know, but I do know that his daughter Ivanka was downstate this morning at a breakfast. She's expected to attend with him. Mike Ditka, Tom Ricketts. I mean, they're all
Tom Ricketts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
And assorted other folks, Republicans from the area. But what he'll address at the fundraiser, anyone's guess.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you for reporting. I know you will be sending some information to the newsroom. And if anything develops, please feel free to call us back. We're here till 3.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Call collect, Susan.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Susan
Bye.
Berkus doing a great job live from the Bolingbrook Golf Club. I got to ask you a question.
Yeah, I think I know what you're going to ask. Go ahead.
Tom Ricketts is there?
I know that, I know that Mr. Ricketts is a Republican. I hadn't heard that he was going to be attending today's event. Mike Ditka was the one name that you kept hearing over and over would be a part of today's festivities. But
wasn't there a Twitter war with, we're going to tell you?
Donald Trump said that he knew some things about Tom's parents that he was going to divulge. So very surprising if Tom Ricketts is there. I'd be shocked almost. I don't know what would be in it for him to be at this event. That's very strange. Steve, oh, that's right. Steve was writing something down, but I'm not sure what.
You can talk on the air.
You're all right, Steve. You can tell us.
I love you, Steve. I turned my mic off so you could whisper something to me, and you didn't. He came in here, I know, to get some chicken wings.
Are there chicken wings in here?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Susan Berkus mentioned that Tom Ricketts may be attending this event today.
Ricketts.
Maybe it's Todd Ricketts.
We misheard.
So not
is that
no
a brother?
Relation.
Is Todd a brother, Tom?
I have no idea.
I don't know the answer to that.
I was surprised to hear a Ricketts name. I'll tell you right now, that was what surprised me.
Well, that shouldn't be surprising.
If it's the same family, but Donald Trump has said some very bad things about. Oh,
they're on board now. No, they're on board now.
Really?
Yeah. It was
when did that happen?
A couple weeks ago, they decided to start funding Trump and Republican Senate candidates. So even though, you know, Trump said, I've got secrets on you. I'm going to release them.
Right. And never did.
No, but it's the dad. It's the, you know.
Todd Ricketts is one of Tom's brothers. Okay.
He's a co-owner of the Cubs.
Co-owner, yeah.
So, and their father is the Ricketts who is funding the.
So how do we find out what led from Donald Trump saying, I know some things about the parents that I can divulge to them being supporters? What happened in the middle there?
A couple of things. They might hate Hillary Clinton more than they despise Donald Trump.
Yeah.
They might, you know, value the idea of a Republican Senate. And one of the ways to do that is to have a strong presidential candidate.
Yeah.
So
keeping the party alive.
Yeah. But I mean, this joint appearance certainly speaks to something. So,
yeah, it does.
Politics makes strange bedfellows, right?
I guess so. Yeah. That was surprising.
Yeah. I was surprised to hear that. Ditka, I'm not surprised, although he would be a strange bedfellow. That's all I'm saying. He'd be itchy.
I think that's a fair
assessment.
He'd be itchy. Yeah.
Gotta
I think he would. All right. We'll take a quick break and then more show coming your way next. Bill F., Wendy Snyder, WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve Bertrand has the Wintrust Business Lunch coming up in about 10 minutes. But the story we were just discussing just got a little bit more interesting. May I share this with you?
Please.
We were talking about how Donald Trump is currently in Bolingbrook, about to speak at the Bolingbrook Golf Club. One of the attendees there, we just found out from Laura Berkus, is one of the Ricketts
Susan
family.
Berkus.
Susan Berkus. What did I say?
You're thinking Laura Ricketts.
Sorry. Oh, I am, and I'll tell you why. Here's why. Susan Berkus just tipped us off to the fact that Todd Ricketts, one of the family, the Cubs owners, is there attending the Trump rally.
And that perplexed us.
It confused us for several reasons, most notably that Donald Trump just a few short months ago was very adamant talking about the Ricketts family, saying that he has some information that he could divulge, some harmful information. That story kind of floated away, and we're all kind of curious as to why the Ricketts family went from being persona non grata or worse to being a supporter of his. Or some members of the family are. I thought this, and I just looked this up online to back it up. This is a story out of the Sun Times, from the Sun Times. It took place in July. Listen to this. Hillary Clinton hits Wilmette on July the 13th for a high-dollar fundraiser hosted by Cubs board member Laura Ricketts.
And this was back in July.
This was in July. So there's certainly some different allegiances in the family, and I guess why wouldn't there be? Think about your own family or anybody's family out there. There's going to be some people.
Some are right, some are left.
Yeah.
Some are in the middle.
Right, right. But I wonder if this comes up at family dinners when they're talking about how great things are at Wrigley. Does anybody even mention politics? I'd probably stay away from it.
I bet they do, because they're both really, you know, it's one thing to have an opinion. It's another thing to support them.
Right.
So they're both probably, you know, both sides are probably going at it, and the turkey ends up on the floor. That would be my guess.
I know.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey, hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Actually, I just texted a link in, too. I read this in Politico magazine today. Todd Ricketts has gone from sort of a never Trump position to he's put together or is working aggressively with it's a PAC which is set up to allow for anonymous donations. which allows big money people who don't want to be associated with the Trump name to give money. And there, he has a goal of $70 million. And I think the article said he's at $30 million. So they're really aggressively working sort of, this would be a pro-Trump thing, I think,
So explain this to me, because I understood part of that, but not all of this. This is people who would essentially be donating to the party, but still don't want their name associated with Donald Trump.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's in Politico. And again, I texted you a link.
I'm looking at it right now, Patrick.
Thank you very much.
We'll read through this.
Have a good day.
Thank you,
you too. As Patrick mentioned, Todd Ricketts, and this according to Politico.com, again, you know, check your sources.
Yeah.
This is who I'm crediting. Todd Ricketts, whose family owns the Chicago Cubs, has raised $30 million for a pair of pro-Trump groups and has discussed a $70 million goal before Election Day, according to three Republican fundraisers familiar with the effort.
Yeah.
They and others in GOP finance circles say Ricketts is making a particular effort to win over donors who want to help Trump, but are leery of having their names publicly associated with the polarizing Republican nominee. Now, if this is the case, his name was revealed.
Right, right.
Ricketts's pitch to these donors focuses on the fact that one of the pro-Trump groups he's fronting can accept unlimited checks while keeping its donors' names secret. And it's a the organization is hashtag Never Trump. So they're really so pretending though, they don't like it.
Wow.
That's genius.
Wow. All right. So their support then is in hopes of getting a Supreme Court justice who's on the Republican side?
That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
If you have a Republican president.
Right.
And the fact that they're staying true to their Republican Party.
Yeah, I guess so, too.
I mean, at some point...
I just like it's fascinating to me. And I know, like I said, everybody's family has certain members that are leaning to the left and certain that are leaning to the right. But it seems like with the Ricketts family, because there's a lot of money to be shared there if they're donating to one or both political parties.
And most families, you know, are on different sides,
right.
But they're not contributing.
Are the Cubs a red team or a blue team? Will they change the
color
of their uniforms?
They're red and blue.
Right, there's red in the pinstripes.
See, right in the middle.
They're Switzerland.
They're the Switzerland of the National League. Wow. You know this has got to be a point of contention, though. You know how when your family gets together and somebody mentions politics and everybody goes, uh-oh, here it comes. Here we go. Think about that.
Yeah, but I told you that's when the Thanksgiving dinner ends.
Right. Well, some families have a rule that once everybody sits down, there's no mention of politics sometimes and or religion. Sometimes religion is also
there. I have never met a family who has that rule.
I got a couple of friends who go, every time my family gets together, that's the one rule. We cannot bring up politics at all because it gets crazy.
After Thanksgiving, so maybe the first week of December, go on YouTube and Facebook and find all the families that got in terrible fights on Thanksgiving. It's heartbreaking to me. It's very stressful. A lot of times when the family gets together, there are some shouting matches, not even about politics and religion.
Just in general.
Yeah. And then there was one video I saw where a kid was acting bad and he was a teenager and I don't know if he had some issues, but he broke the table. The turkey ended up on the floor. It's really heartbreaking because as great as the holidays are and Thanksgiving's my favorite because no presents, you're just all around the family and hanging out. It breaks my heart to see that happen, and it happens a lot.
I know.
No family is perfect, including the Ricketts.
I guess not. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Stay where you are. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. Part two of our Wednesday show. It's me, Bill. It's her, Wendy.
Hello.
Hi, Wendy. And then if you want to join in, you can listen in. There's no doubt about that. But if you want to be heard, 312-981-7200, you can text us or you can call us.
You can be an active listener where you do call in or just an inactive listener.
Right.
And chill out.
You could help design the sets for the show or the costumes. You can score the show if you have music that you'd like to hear. Whatever you want to do, be a contributor.
I'd be up for that.
That'd be fine by me. That would be absolutely fine by me. Did you see this? For years and years, 11 to be exact, the number one selling costume for girls at Halloween time was what? What do you think more girls were than anything else for the last 11 years at Halloween?
The princess from Frozen.
princesses in general. Sometimes the princesses from, or princess, I guess, from Frozen. But that was the number one selling girl's costume, was a princess.
Were
you
girls
the Frozen one.
Ever a princess?
Because
I got to be 100% honest with you. Never in my life have I been a princess.
Oh, don't say that. You're a princess every day. Every day.
Never. I was Raggedy Ann one year. I was a devil. That was my favorite one.
I cannot
one.
See that.
I was an angel. The next year, just to show that I'm...
There's balance.
Yin and yang.
Yep.
I was a hobo.
Were you yin and yang one year?
No, but I should have been.
The conjoined twins from the Guinness Book of World Records. That's, yin and yang bunker.
That wasn't their name.
Chang and Eng bunker.
Thank you.
I don't think bunker was their given name, though.
They were big fans of All in the Family.
Were they? Were they named after the Bunker family? I didn't know that.
Were you a hobo? Because I was a hobo every couple of years.
I was never a hobo, but that was like in our neighborhood. Kids who did the fallback costumes always went to either hobo or ghost.
Ghost.
Ghost, right?
I hate to admit what I was one year.
Now you have to.
I know, but this is really going to go against everything I believe in and you believe in.
Uh-oh.
I was a clown.
Were you a clown one year?
And I still don't like them. I didn't like myself that year.
So why the decision?
A lot of times in our family, things were handed down from my cousin Susie. So right. I played the flute in high school because she played the flute, mm-hmm. or in junior high, actually. We never got anything new. I was the last kid.
Right.
Spoiled rotten, but it was a lot of hand-me-down stuff.
Sure.
So a lot of years, my cousin Susie was a teacher, and she would dress up as things. And then when options came up, my mom would say, look through Susie's closet.
Yeah, right.
And she had a clown outfit. It was a black and white striped clown outfit with like a big bib that went around.
Oh.
Like Bozo had the collar that was round all the way around.
Yes.
And then you would put makeup on and clown hair.
Oh, there it is.
I didn't have big shoes, though.
Well,
I didn't make the full commitment to being a clown.
That's part of being a clown is the oversized shoes.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
Maybe you were smart enough to realize that's what would have put you over the edge.
No, it would have made me trip when I was going up and down the stairs to get candy, but never a princess.
That's so strange. Now, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this. My brother and friends and I would do themed costumes in that, like, for a long time, I was a lone wolf. That was my costume. I meant I would just be, like, one year I was Peter Pan. One year I was Colonel Sanders, and I won the costume contest at St. Damien. I was Colonel Sanders.
Good call
that was a good
on
one.
That.
That was a good one. But then we figured out, like, we could all dress the same. Like, one year we were Robin Hood and his Merry Men. One year we were all Star Trek guys. Like, five of us would all be something.
Together, yeah, a group costume. Ever the Backstreet Boys?
We preceded the Backstreet
Boys.
Oh,
that's
Boys,
true.
So we
they
could have
stole
done that.
From you.
Yeah, they did steal from us.
The Bill Street Boys.
And then we would do, like a 1 minute skit at every door. I know that sounds crazy, but you can't believe the amount of candy we got. We got an insane amount
so
of candy.
So they'd double your amount because you performed?
So much more than double. Just take, they'd open their door. Just take what you want. Just go in the living room and select an artifact from the shelf, anything from the top two shelves, anything you want. And then my mom would be getting calls from, you know, neighbors going, hey, the boys haven't been by the house and we've got relatives over who want to see the show. She'd be booking times. We'd go, we got a 9:30 and a 9:45. That's all we have left. If you want us, you got to act now. So for 11 years now, the National Retail Federation has charted this. The number one selling costume for girls was princesses. Not this year. What will it be this year?
Oh, that is a good question.
What do you think it could possibly be that has replaced the princess?
A minion.
It is. No, but that's a great guess. May I?
Yes.
Can I divulge? Now more than ever, girls want to be superheroes, much like boys.
Good.
And why shouldn't they be?
Are they being women superheroes?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wonder Woman, Supergirl, Jean Grey from the X-Men, Storm.
Well, I guess there are a lot more. Is Harley Quinn in there?
Harley Quinn is definitely in there. It says, so far this year, now this is early, I don't know, have kids already selected their Halloween costume now?
Are you kidding me?
It's October Saturday, 31st.
But Saturday is October 1st.
5 weeks early seems...
When you were a kid, weren't you excited to decide what you wanted to be and get your costume so you could wear it out before?
I had a wish list, But
oh my
we didn't.
God, you did?
Yeah, but we didn't act on it until about a week or two earlier than Halloween. That seems early for me that a kid would already buy a costume for Halloween, but maybe. They say so far this year, it's superheroes across the board for kids, for adults, and for pets.
I know. Get Steve Dale in here because there's a whole market for Halloween costumes for pets. I refuse to put Tiki in anything.
Oh, sexy poodle. This according to Lorenza Celtigiori, the owner of Total Fright, a year-round costume shop in Arlington, Virginia. The female superhero, he says, has particularly taken off this year. It is the year of girl power. Among the biggest sellers, he says, are Supergirl and the one you mentioned, Harley Quinn. Now, which version of Harley Quinn? Because if it's the one from the movie Suicide Squad, I don't think I'd let my little girl dress that way. I don't think I'd let my big girl dress that way. That's a pretty tempting costume. I wouldn't be comfortable with that.
They would, cover up a little bit.
I hope so, because Margot Robbie was wearing next to nothing in that costume. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying if a loved one was dressed that way, I'd be a little suspect. The shift comes in a year packed with superhero movies, which included Deadpool, Suicide Squad, X-Men Apocalypse, Batman versus Superman, all on the big screen, while Captain America duked it out with Iron Man. But action flicks aren't just dominating the silver screen. On television, the CW has 4 superhero shows in its lineup: Supergirl, Arrow, DC's Legend of Tomorrow, and DC Superhero Girls. The movie industry has a huge impact on costuming, so that's certainly a part of it, says Celtigiori. But then again, who doesn't want to be a superhero? Do you know what I noticed at my health club? I noticed this a couple months ago, and I keep thinking, I'm imagining this, because I like superhero stuff. I know I'm imagining this, but I'm not. I can't tell you the percentage of guys working out at the club, big, strong, muscular, bodylifting guys, whose T-shirts all reflect either Superman, Batman, Iron Man,
very
Spider-Man, Captain America.
Look down the Michigan Avenue when people walk by every day.
All day long.
I'm surprised you don't have a T-shirt that has that.
Yeah, I don't. Isn't that weird? I don't know why I don't, but I don't.
Both my boys have Green Lantern, Superman. It's just if they go mainstream, like at Old Navy and Target.
Well, Target's got like all these really cool vintage. Like the Batman logo I love the most is the one from the '60s television show, and they've got that. Every time I see it, I say to Terry,
"Well, go get it.
You should get that."
Well, why don't you?
Yeah.
It fits you.
I know.
I thought I was really good at making costumes because Dylan one year was the man with the yellow hat and he carried his little Curious George around.
Oh, that's cool.
I got to find that picture because I did a really good job on it. But Laura's mom was much more creative. What did your mom make for you, Laura?
Oh, I'm 57, so there were cigarette ads on back when I was in that age of trick-or-treating. And she stapled together a number of cigarette cartons and had me wear them. And I was an ad, and I had to do the statement that they had on, the tagline. I had to, lean my shoulder and give it a little wiggle and go, "Why don't you pick me up and smoke me sometime?
I love your mom."
Your mom came up with that, or you came up? Your mom said you got to say the phrase?
My mom. Yeah, why don't you pick me up and smoke me sometime?
Oh, my God, that's awesome.
Did you get a lot of candy or cigarettes that particular Halloween?
I just remember being very embarrassed.
Sure.
Thank you for sharing that. Wow. We appreciate it so much, Laura. We have to take a quick break and back with more costume ideas. Mm-hmm. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Weren't you an EAS test for Halloween one year? I seem to remember you telling me that you were. You just went to people's houses instead of trick-or-treat. You just went.
She was an EBS test?
Well, yeah, because then it was EBS.
Back then.
Now it's EAS.
Yeah,
negative.
Upgraded it now.
708 says, when I was 10 or 11, I had jet black hair. My mom made my costume a geisha girl, complete with well-rehearsed dialect. Wasn't till I was older I teased her about making me an Asian hooker.
Oh, no.
My daughter's going to be a Day of the Dead señorita from 815.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I'd like to be a superhero if I could conduct superhero goodwill at my leisure. It seems like it would be a bit too time-consuming otherwise.
Yeah, there's that.
Somebody said they saw Halloween costumes out at Costco first week of September.
I'm trying to remember the first time. I didn't see costumes right away. I saw candy. Boy, it would have to be either late July or early August, one of the drugstores by me, the CVS, had half an aisle devoted to Halloween candy in either late July or early August. Jeez. No costumes yet, but I don't remember as a kid ever deciding this early on. There was always like three or four that you had in your head, but wouldn't make the determination until closer to the actual day.
Much to every mom's chagrin.
I know. Because
really, I get last-minute requests all the time.
I know.
I made Dylan was a cookie monster one year. Just got a blue sweatsuit, and I took a big box and painted cookies on it with the K backwards.
That's cool. That's a good costume.
That was pretty easy. My man was
you
the
didn't
yellow
buy
hat.
Him usually. Did you usually make them?
I preferred to make them because I hate spending $50 on some polyester ugly thing.
Right.
I have a difficult time doing that.
And then do you tell your kids what brides always tell bridesmaids, that you can wear these for other occasions? I'm making you this Cookie Monster costume, but it's not just for Halloween. You can go anywhere in it.
There was a pair of crushed velvet knickers that I found at a thrift shop, and those have been worn 100 times, right. Like for various costumes.
Right. Sure.
An Ellis Island one time at school. Michael was some immigrant from Ireland. And, I mean, they came in handy for everything.
All right, be honest, because I think that's a great gift, an Ellis Island immigrant. But how many times did he have to explain who he was during the day? Did people know?
Well,
this was an
Ellis Island chapter, so they all dressed as someone. And they had, they didn't have a play, but they all pretended they were coming off the boat from Ellis Island.
Right.
But then he used them for something else for Halloween.
Oh,
I don't know what.
Excellent.
Michael's been Neil Young, Bob Dylan, David Bowie. Those have been easy.
My son Noah's idea, and he never pulled it off, was to go to school on October 30th in full costume. And he was going to be something like Mr. Early Man or something like that.
Oh, that's funny.
That's beautiful.
Barbara, what about your Halloween costumes?
So what I did was one year I took a bathing cap and glued cotton balls all over it. And then I took my white Keds, glued cotton balls all over that, and then dressed in white long sleeve, white jeans, and then took a poster board, taped it around my middle, and I put a sign around me that said, "Stick me in your ear." I was a
Q-tip. You were a Q-tip?
I was a Q-tip. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, thanks.
That's
and then
a
I
good
actually
idea.
Have a really good partner one for people who are going for partners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I dressed in a camouflage shirt with a canteen and dog tags and a camouflage hat. And my girlfriend dressed in camouflage pants. And I had a sign that said upper, and she had a sign that said lower. And we were in upper and lower GI.
That's hysterical.
Very inventive.
That's a real easy one. That's a real easy one, you know.
That's so funny.
And I love that you
took a little bit more time.
I love that you carry a sign with you so you don't have to explain to people what you are.
Well, the GI, we still did. They kept going, upper army person, the Q-tip was a little bit easier.
Sure.
Of course, then I'm telling people to stick me in your ear, and you're not supposed to do that anymore.
Yeah,
but,
that's time to change.
I felt a little guilty. You're not supposed to put Q-tips in your ear anymore. But
I know, just your finger. Nothing bigger than your finger, because you just push the wax in, they say.
Yep.
But everybody's
that's
still...
That's what they say.
Don't you still use a Q-tip?
But I didn't put brown. Yeah, of course. But I didn't put brown on the cotton
ball.
You know, that would have been gross.
Oh, goodbye, right? Barbara. Hang up on yourself.
I thought that was cute.
It is.
I didn't do that. I was a teacher, too. I'm not going to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Kids, you know.
Too responsible.
So anyway.
Thank you. Awesome ideas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As the night progressed, you could do that. I mean, not early on. You want to present yourself as a clean Q-tip, but later on in the evening, maybe.
Yeah, as the night goes on.
Sure.
More used.
Yeah.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, quite a few years ago, the Halloween parties, everybody was told they had to wear, guys and girls had to wear a blue dress to the Halloween party. So everybody had to run to Goodwill and find something hanging on the rack and wore it. So, yeah, it was a statement party.
Wait, why? I don't understand why. Why the blue dresses?
Are you that young that you don't remember who was wearing a blue dress about 20 years ago?
Oh, Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, is that why? All right, now it makes sense.
I don't get it, though. Everybody, even guys, had to dress that in the blue?
Yep. Yeah, everybody was blue. Yeah, it was an interesting statement.
They should add all the women in blue dresses and the guys just have a sly smile, like a guilty smile.
Did you have fun at that party, Dave?
Yes, we did. It was after the first couple comments, it all kind of, you know, we just kept going.
Thank you for sharing that.
I like a party that has a mandated costume. I don't think I've ever been to one of those.
I haven't either.
Here's how everyone's dressing.
Hey, Kim.
Hey.
You're our last one on this subject.
All right. So I had the pajamas with it that looked like it was cloudy, you know, the blue sky with the clouds.
Yeah.
And so I took that and I wore that and I carried a squirt gun in my pocket and I went as partly cloudy with a chance of rain.
I love it.
Very funny. Nicely
done. Same vein as the other girl that did the upper and lower GI, I went as far as to get sweatpants and a sweatshirt made that said upper and lower GI.
That's pretty good.
And my husband and I went as that.
That's really cute. Kim, thank you.
Yeah. Hey, thanks. I love you guys. Have
thank
a great
you,
day.
Kim. You
thanks,
too.
Thanks, you as
appreciate
well.
Appreciate it. All right, let's do this. We'll
creative
take a break.
Listeners,
very
I'll
creative.
Tell you.
Extremely creative. A break, Steve with the news, and then one of our favorite guests, Tony Fulmer, will be on to help you with your plants. It's the fall season, as you already know. He'll get you through that. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Oh, I just thought of a song we should have used for Tony Fulmer.
What song, Wendy?
Let It Grow by Eric Clapton, because he's so good at it. Tony Fulmer in the studio with us from the chalet. It is fall time. Or who says fall time?
You just did.
It's fall. Yeah. It's autumn.
Autumn.
It is time to do some different things to the plants in our yard,
yes.
The shrubs.
Yes.
What do we need to do?
Right now, the most critical thing, even though it's raining a little bit out there, is water, water, water. It is bone dry. Anyone that has tried to go out in their garden and dig anything or plant anything, for the most part, it's really dry. And I was gone for 3 weeks on vacation. I just came back, and I only had an inch and a half of rain in my rain gauge for 3 weeks.
Didn't they say this was the rainiest summer? Because I don't think that's true.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah.
Just coming back from the airport and looking at plants, I could see trees that were already defoliating, and they were scorched and brown, which is just a factor of dehydration.
No, they said it was the rainiest summer.
No, I understand, but that was a certain point. It was a rainy spring and early summer.
Oh.
But most recently, I mean, for those that garden, if you get out and dig around in your lawn or dig around in your garden, you will find that it is bone dry.
So even though we see all the mist almost constantly this time of year, is there such a thing as too much water for plants? Can you overdo
course,
it? There
of
is.
Of course, but that we're not anywhere close to that. I mean, yeah. It's really, really, really dry. So people should be prioritizing, mm-hmm. and anything that has been planted, whether it's a perennial or a tree or shrub, they need to make sure that they water it on a regular basis up until the time the ground freezes.
All right.
That's really important.
All right. You brought a really beautiful wedding gift for Kevin and Sarah. Kevin won't be back. We have to take care of it until he comes
Pressure's
back.
Pressure's on.
Can you explain what it is? Because I have never seen or heard of anything like this, and you said it's all the rage these days.
Well, the rage is the air plants, and they are bromeliads, and they survive by taking moisture from the air. And so there are a lot of different, there's a big, 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 big family of them, so they look a lot different. There are a lot of different kinds, a lot of different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I brought in has the Tillandsias are hot glued onto a driftwood sculpture. And so basically the care is to keep them out of, most of them, out of direct sun. And then once every 5 to 7 days, depending upon the type, take them to the shower or to the bathroom and just mist them lightly. And that'll pretty much do it.
So we have to do that twice before they come back?
Twice before Kevin comes back would be a good idea.
You want to do it, Bill?
Yeah, I'll do it.
I'll take one. And that way, if something happens.
So don't actually shower with them, but bring them in the room with you when you're showering.
That
Tony.
Is correct.
All right.
That is correct.
That's the mistake I made last time. Yeah. Why? How does.
keep your back turned to them.
Always.
Please. Always.
Because I'm shy.
And don't drop the soap.
That's for sure. How does something like this become? You just said they're all the rage. So how did that happen? How does a plant all of a sudden become the thing to own? What happened there?
I think it's like any kind of fashion.
Yeah.
Something catches someone's eye.
Yeah.
And in the case of plants, it needs to be they look contemporary.
They
totally.
Do.
They're very contemporary looking, and they're also really, really forgiving, of minimal maintenance, and so that was very easy. And so since they don't need soil and they don't need a container, that makes them really, really useful for all kinds of different applications, you know, putting them up on walls or hanging them from ceilings or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just all kinds of different applications for them, and again, I think a lot of it's the look. They're contemporary, and they just don't require any care at all.
They look great, and you mentioned part of it is a sculpture. Part of it isn't a plant at all. It's just something they've added on.
Driftwood.
Is that right? Is that what it is?
Right,
driftwood?
Right. Yeah. It's just a driftwood sculpture, and then we just hot glue gun those on with some moss.
That was very nice of you to do that for him.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I'm sure he will love it.
On behalf of Kevin and Sarah, we thank you very much.
Well, just so they get alive next when they come back.
Mm-hmm.
We'll work on it.
Pressure's on.
Yep. I have not gardened at all this summer. I told you this off the air. I did not weed. I did not water. I didn't do anything. And I have to tell you, this is the most beautiful my hydrangeas have looked, all my perennials. It's the best they've ever looked, although there are tons of weeds around it.
Did you get any advice from anyone about hydrangeas earlier in the season?
Hmm.
Yes, you did tell me how to cut them, which taller in the middle, and kind of shape them as I did, kind of like a ball. Unbelievably beautiful. Thank you for the advice.
Great. Terrific.
Chalet Nursery is where you go, and I don't have the exact information in front of me. So what is the address of?
3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette.
Across from the Panda Express.
Yes.
That's how I find
your favorite.
It.
Yes, exactly.
That's how I
get
know.
Some orange
exactly.
chicken and get some orange blossoms.
Right. They have a package deal going in the month of September.
We should work on that.
But how does something happen like what Wendy just described, though? She's not out there working on the plants, and yet they look fantastic. What's the key to that? How could that possibly be?
I think it's a matter of general appearance. And she didn't address how the rest of the beds look, if there's a lot of weeds in there or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I did. There are totally weeds all over the place. So,
okay.
It doesn't look as pristine as it should, but honestly, everything, my lavender, I overwatered that last year because when you transplant something, the first thing you think, got to water it like
water.
Crazy, and I killed it. You also told me not to water it so much, so I ignored everything.
Hmm.
Well, I guess maybe there's such a thing as a weed mulch, and maybe since it's been dry, maybe the weeds are shading and not competing, and the hydrangeas are a little bit more established, and so it's keeping them from baking maybe a little bit.
And my goldenrod is going crazy right now. This is the time that it comes out. It's beautiful. It just kind of looks like green stalks. And then all of a sudden, like tails of gold just start in the fall. It's really beautiful. And you help people if you want to come up with different plants in your beds, which will bloom at different times.
Yes.
They can get help from that as well.
Of course. Absolutely.
We're getting a giant ash tree cut down in our backyard because it had the ash borer.
Mm-hmm.
Beetle, and it took us a while, but we're finally cutting it down, and they've cut half of it now, and some electrical wires are in the way, so ComEd's going to help. That tree will be gone. All of a sudden, we can see my back neighbor's entire garage and yard, and we have no privacy. Is now a good time to plant some shrubs or any choices of trees that would help kind of close up that area again, that don't get too tall to hit the wires?
Well, are you literally planting under the wires?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that's where my backyard is. What am I?
Well, but you can't pull it in because usually the wires give you a 15 to 20 foot limit. And so that tends to limit you to an ornamental tree, a flowering tree.
I'm good with that just so it covers the open area now that looks right in our neighbor's backyard.
Okay. And you get good sun there.
Yes.
Okay.
Now that the big dead ash tree is going to be gone, yes.
Okay. If one of the first things that you could do, the first thing that comes to mind would be to do a flowering crab. And so you can pick your color in red or pink or white. You can pick the shape, and you'll have great seasonal interest from that. You'll have great flowering in the spring.
Lots of crab apples in the yard, right?
There are some. There are two. One is called Donald Wyman, and one is called Red Jewel. And both of those have persistent berries that the birds won't take, and they won't drop off. They just basically mummify over the course of the winter.
I'll have a mummy tree in my yard.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, but just in time for Halloween. But you can look at them all winter, and in a winter snowstorm, something like Red Jewel will have these beautiful red berries hanging on it.
Really?
That it almost looks like Christmas ornaments on it. And then finally, by March or April, they'll turn brown, but they're just no mess at all.
All right,
that
kinda like
good.
That.
And that gets about 15 to 18 feet tall and about 12 feet wide. Kind of, it's very oval and vase-shaped.
And that's good to fill out some of the area.
Yeah,
also, Rosa Sharon I could use.
That's not going to give you any coverage. That's a shrub. Wendy.
Come on.
I have a Rose of Sharon that got really big and blocks the side neighbor. We don't like to see our neighbors.
No, and it's seen, not it that. Seems not.
It's not that, honestly. But you do want a little privacy.
Naturalists
if you're,
usually want privacy.
Well, if you're in your yard, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but ordinarily, I guess ordinarily we would say Rose of Sharon is a shrub. And you typically you would not get a lot of screening from that. When you say screening, I tend to think more of something that's going to be 12 to 15 or more feet tall and at least 8 to 10 feet wide.
Is that big enough for you?
Donald Wyman.
How much screening do you need?
Donald Wyman or Red Jewel is beautiful also.
Tony, you should know this about Wendy. They have a hot tub, and she and her husband are swingers, and they don't want the neighbors to see this. So the higher the
bushes,
that's
why I
was
going for that instead of the Rose of Sharon. Yeah, right. I got that look. I knew.
All right, maybe we'll just get a 6-foot cedar fence. Okay.
That'll work. And make Mexico pay for it. All right, let's take a quick break. Calls are coming in for Tony Fulmer. If you have a question about your gardening, 312-981-7200. He's never been stumped. I don't know how he does it. Stick around.
Stumped, I get it.
I get it. Oh. Phil and Wendy WGN.
Thank you, Lise. That was perfect. This should be Tony Fulmer's theme song.
When Tony calls me on my cell phone, this is the song that plays.
The ringtone?
That's right.
Yep.
The Chalet Nursery in Wilmette. Isn't it thechaletnursery.com?
www.chaletnursery.com, yes.
There you go. Some questions. When and how do we plant new bulbs?
Okay, one of the things that you look for is, the thing to do would be to buy them right now and then store them where they're cool and dry so you get the very best selection, so you get the colors you want, especially if you're doing things like tulips. Buy them now and then store them in a dry place like the basement.
Because if you're trying to get allium, which are really cool, they're like a giant purple softball, mm-hmm. those sell out immediately.
Well, we always have them.
All right.
Do you?
Make a point. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good.
We always make
they're
a point.
They're the coolest things.
They're very cool, and they dry beautifully.
Yep.
So with the bulbs, buy them, and then you want to wait until probably mid-October. One of the worst things you can do is plant them too early. So I just started taking the soil temperature. So that'll be on our website now. I'll change that weekly. Soil temperature should be mid-50s. You want the soils cool.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to look at the website, then after we've had our first killing frost, so after your tomatoes, impatiens, coleus, begonias, anything like that has been killed by frost, typically there's a good association between that and the soil temperatures being cool enough to plant your bulbs. And then water when you put them in, and then if we don't get good deep soaking rains between now and the time the ground freezes, you want to water probably every 10 days because that stimulates root development, and they need to be rooted before the ground freezes.
All right. Please ask Tony, what do I do with my potted plants?
Potted plants that are outside?
Outside.
Okay.
Canna plants, is that?
Oh, cannas. Okay. Cannas are something that you let go dormant, so let the frost or freeze kill those. And then you go out with a big, big, big shovel or big spade, and you try and dig up the clumps. They have big, long roots that are actually bulb-like, and they're very easy to store. You can put those in a box in the basement, so just cut the tops off, store them, and then you'll go and look at them in April, and you can take a knife, and there will be little tiny sprouts about every 3 or 4 inches on those, so you can, from what was one plant this year, you can have 5 or 6 or 8 plants next year. And they're very easy to store in the basement.
All right, Sally has a question. Sally, we're talking to Tony Fulmer from the Chalet Nursery. You can go to chaletnursery.com, and he is the chief horticulturist there. Hi, Sally.
Hi, how you doing, Wendy?
Good. Did you have a question for Tony?
Yes, I've got lots of crab apple trees in my yard.
Okay.
They seem to bloom in early spring and then lose all their leaves in the summer. And then this time of year, of course, they're dropping the little crab apples, but they look dead. There's just no foliage on them. Is that normal or?
That is. Are these fairly large, older trees?
Yes, they are.
Okay. That is a disease called apple scab, and it is something
sounds
that,
lovely.
Yes, it is.
Hey, Bill, do you have apple scab?
Can I take it off?
off to the free clinic. On the new varieties, the newer varieties are bred for having apple scab resistance. 25 years ago or more, we did not have varieties that had that. So when you have those varieties, if it's a problem, you want to keep the leaves off them. You need to spray them preventatively in the spring. Three applications of a fungicide. The first one would be made about the time the buds are swelling. You can see little tiny green tips. Then at 10-day intervals. It's for a total of 3 applications of a general purpose fungicide. So if you want to call me or contact me at Chalet, I can make a recommendation for you. It is that disease
that
disease is always going to be worse if the spring has been cold and wet.
Okay, well, I'm glad the mystery is finally solved. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Tony, we lost Grandma to apple scab. Do I need to be tested?
No, it is
I'm
not.
I'm okay? It doesn't carry over?
Well, actually, it skips a generation,
oh, it does.
So you might be
Maybe
in line
I should
for
be
that.
Tested. All right.
Absolutely.
All right, Marilyn is on the line with a great question. Hi, Marilyn.
Yes, hi.
Hello, Marilyn.
My question is, I have a couple spots in my garden where the dog has messed them. They're burnt out spots, and I'm wondering what I can do about it this time of year.
Well, this is in the lawn, or is this out in the garden?
This is in the lawn.
Where your dog has been relieving itself, right? Because
okay.
we have
yes,
some of those spots,
right.
too.
She has, yes.
Okay, you can put a very, very light application of gypsum on there to neutralize that, and then water, gypsum,
yeah.
uh-huh, and then water to try and leach those salts through.
Okay.
I know
Thank
there are
you.
Pills. Okay. Good luck to you, Marilyn. They have pills that you can give your dog. So
yes.
So the chemical reaction
yes.
doesn't cause brown spots?
Yes.
Does that work?
Yes, it does. And we actually have, and this really sounds like snake oil, but we have in our pet essentials department, we have a rocks from Australia that take the impurities out of the water, and you leave this in the dog's water bowl, and it really, really works.
How is that possible? What's going on with rocks from Australia doing that?
There's something about the chemical composition of these rocks
mm-hmm.
that they tie up the impurities that are in the water,
mm-hmm.
and it makes a huge...
I just saw you get sad at hearing this song. I watched you get sad when you heard this song.
Well, you know, Prince wasn't on the tip of everyone's tongues for quite some time, and we, of course, started doing Prince Spaghetti Day here on Wednesdays,
yeah.
which a lot of the younger folk have no idea what we're talking about.
That was a commercial in the 70s where they'd say, Anthony Martignetti lives on the west side of Boston, and every Wednesday is Prince Spaghetti Day, and his mother would lean out the window and yell, Anthony! And Anthony, even though he was on the opposite side of Boston, a large city, would hear his mom and then run home because Wednesday was Prince Spaghetti Day.
So we resurrected the Prince Spaghetti Day and played Prince almost every Wednesday. And then after he passed away, we didn't do it. Should we do it and keep him alive?
I don't know. It's emotional. It's very emotional.
It is very emotional. What else is very emotional is something that I saw in the local paper. Something that will maybe astound you, or maybe you'll go, I knew it. Illinois commuters put in more time in just getting to work than almost all other American workers. Illinois.
You would automatically think this would be a Los Angeles thing, wouldn't you?
Yep, New York even. I've never been there. I shouldn't say it.
Yeah, when I think of long commutes, though, I do automatically go to the Los Angeles area, Southern California.
What is it called? The freeway there?
Yeah. Yeah.
The average Illinois commute is nearly a half an hour each way.
Oh,
I would
think a lot more for
That's
most.
That's the average, though.
The average is only a half hour. I would almost double that.
Doesn't it take you more than a half hour to get to work?
I live in Evanston, and it takes me a little over an hour and 5 minutes most days.
It takes me about 50 minutes to get in the morning and an hour 20 to get home.
Wow.
So the average Illinois commute, nearly a half hour each way, a full 28.8 minutes, according to new U.S. Census survey estimates. The survey said
mm-hmm.
28.8 minutes, which I think is really low.
I don't think I've ever had a job that's been within a half an hour of my house, wherever I've lived at the time of the job.
I don't think I have. Well, yeah, I worked at Brookfield Zoo. I could
that
get
was
there.
Just down the street.
And
then.
I lived in Brookfield, so I could ride my bike there in probably 8 minutes.
That's very easy.
Indiana's average commute is a full 5.5 minutes less than Illinois and Iowa. Or excuse me, 5 minutes less than Illinois, so 23.8 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And Iowa is 19 minutes total.
We're
way above Iowa. 19 to 30?
Right.
I would say the average is 45, the average.
I'm shocked that they're putting it in the bracket of a half an hour. I know hardly anybody who only commutes a half an hour a day.
Illinois has the seventh worst commute time out of the 50 states in the District of Columbia. With all that time sitting around behind the wheel or stuck on a train or bus, no wonder there are so many fat people around these days. This according to
the
Patch.
Does it say that
Patch.
In the story, or
yep.
did you add that? It
I says did not that in the story? Add that. New York, Maryland, and New Jersey had the three longest average commutes. Montana and the Dakotas were the shortest. The average Illinois commute was actually up 12 seconds from the year before.
Is there a lot of traffic? I've never been to Montana, but I don't imagine, even in its busiest parts of Montana, Helena, that it would be that busy.
That's horse time, I think.
Are they figuring in horse time in Montana? All right.
Now I'm intrigued by the so many fat people. Illinois, according to the CDC.
It really said that in the story?
Yeah, and then you click on the link, and this was just a couple of days ago. Illinois is kind of fat, according to the Centers for Disease Control.
That's polite.
But not as fat as most of its neighbors. And I like to say heavy.
Big boned. Rubenesque.
I say heavy.
Let's say heavy then.
Illinois ranked 18th out of the 50 states and the District of Columbia for the prevalence of self-reported obesity. Self-reported? Who's going to go, hello?
I got some stories to tell you. Right. Hold on while I get a zinger. I got to tell you this.
Self-reported? I lie about my weight. Who's going to turn themselves
right.
in?
No. I know.
So, yes, Illinois ranked 18th, 30.8%, according to a CDC study shows. 30.8% of Illinois overweight.
I know this will sound terrible. I shouldn't even guess, but I'm going to guess. Is it our neighbors to the north? Were they the worst?
Let me get the list here. All right. No.
They weren't?
All right. The Good. CDC ranking of self-reported obesity prevalence. Again, self-reported.
How trusting of them. I'd like to report that I'm overweight, and as long as you're on the line, could I get a pizza? Is there any way I could send me a pizza, please?
Illinois' 18th, 30.8% of the population in Illinois is overweight. And, you know, Chicago Patch, I don't like
three
fat.
Three out of 10?
I don't, let's say overweight, don't say fat.
Right, that's rude.
It's just an ugly word, it's so shaming. North Dakota is
pleasingly
above us.
Pleasingly plump. Can we go with pleasingly just plump?
Heavy or overweight.
All right.
North Dakota ranked 17th, 31%. Michigan, 31.2% of the people in Michigan are overweight. Indiana, 31.3%.
Mm-hmm. All these are close. Neck and neck.
31.4% Nebraska.
A flabby neck and neck. Nebraska is. I wouldn't have put them up there.
31.7% of people in South Carolina are overweight.
Yeah.
Iowa, weighing in, I shouldn't say that
either. Say weighing in.
32.1%. Texas, 32.4%. Tied with Missouri, 32.4%.
The show me state.
Here we have the top 10.
Oh, don't show me. It should be, please don't show me state. Keep it to yourself state.
Here's the top 10 of overweight states.
Here's our lucky winners.
We're not in the top 10 of that, which is good.
That is good. That's very good.
Top 10 is Missouri and Texas tied for 10th, 32.4%. Then Tennessee, 33.8%. There's not a lot of calories in moonshine, is there?
Moon pies.
Oh, yeah.
That's why.
And what?
Mountain Dew?
No, the Goo clusters come from
right.
Tennessee.
Right.
That explains it.
They serve that for dinner there in Tennessee.
Babies,
Mom, not Goo Goo clusters for dinner again.
Babies don't even say Goo Goo Gaga. They say Goo Goo clusters. Number 8, Oklahoma, 33.9%.
Oh, no.
These are the top 10 of the most overweight states. Kansas,
34.2%.
Wow. Arkansas, 34.5%.
Yeah.
Kentucky, 34.6% of people are overweight. A three-way tie for second place, Alabama.
Yeah.
Mississippi.
Yeah.
West Virginia. Lots of gravy in Mississippi.
No one, by the way, noticing that most of these states are in the southern region of the country, right? Nobody's noticing that, I hope.
Oh, I didn't.
Nearly every one of them is.
35.6 is that three-way tie for second place. And the fattest place around is Louisiana.
How about that?
36.2% of the people who live there.
Wow.
Of self-reported obesity prevalence.
Wow.
Again, who's going to report it? You want to know where Wisconsin fared on this?
I know this sounds horrible, but I've heard in the past that state, you know, it's not up there, though. Obviously
I don't even
good.
Have it on here.
It didn't make the top, what was this, the top 20?
Top 51. Wait, they're all states here. How could it not be in here?
Nobody reported themselves.
you know what? That is it.
They were too busy munching down on snacks to even call the number.
I cannot find. Oh, Wisconsin. I'm sorry.
There they are.
Tied for 19th, so they're less heavy than we are.
Oh, how about that?
A tenth of a point.
They are not.
That's what it says. Georgia and Wisconsin is 19.
Steve, by the way, furious at this news. At this news.
Makes me angry. I processed cheese. I lived up there for a while.
30.7% tied for 19th place, Georgia and Wisconsin. 30.7% of the population are overweight. In Illinois, it's 30.8%.
Wow. Every one of those numbers is sick. That's roughly one out of three people. And again, this is self-reported, so...
Again, I don't understand the self-reported. Who's going to turn themselves in?
I don't know.
For that's... eating the extra Twinkie.
That's disturbing.
Well, it's, you know,
on every
is
level.
It disturbing or is it just that's the way it is?
I would love to see these numbers, let's say 25 or 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you there wasn't a single state that was anywhere near 30, 25 or 30 years ago.
36.2.
What's happened to
Louisiana,
us?
Louisiana, the top. A lot of Cajun spices.
Is
I
the
think.
Cajuns?
No, because I would think that that would...
be a deterrent.
Yeah, and you got a lot of, how do you say it? Crayfish?
Crawfish?
Crawfish. Those are not very caloric. They're not.
I
Seafood
know.
Is not.
Well, someone's sneaking a snack somewhere.
Red beans and rice. There it is.
All right, that might be a contributor. All right, we're going to take a nap.
And then get a snack.
Get a snack, and then we'll come back if you want to jump in. Or I shouldn't even say jump in after what we just talked about. If you want to just carefully walk in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, as Wendy just pointed out, Illinois did not make the top 10 in terms of states. We were way up there in commute. Like, Illinoisans are commuting. They didn't just say Chicagoans, right? They said
Illinois.
People in Illinois are commuting longer
the
than
anywhere
else.
The average being a half hour, which I think is totally under what it is.
That seems wrong.
And I think this weight thing is totally over.
You could tie the two together in saying we're in our cars so often commuting that we don't have time to work out and take care of ourselves.
Excuse me, that's why I clicked on the people are sitting in their car and gaining more weight. You said, does it really say that? I said, yes.
It and did it say that.
Took me to this thing
it
right here.
It.
But the weight charts are a little askew, and Catherine, you wanted to jump in with something on this?
Yeah, Wendy and Bill, I absolutely love you guys. I'm a dietitian and a diabetes educator, and it's actually much worse than you think, Wendy. What you're reading is the rates of obesity. The rates of overweight are in addition to that. So I think it's something like over 60% of Illinoisans are either overweight or obese.
Wait, you cut out during the percentage.
60%.
60%. Oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, over 60% of us are either overweight or obese, so it's very bad. There's very few normal weight people walking around anymore.
All right, but can I just ask you something, Catherine? Because I went to the CDC's website. What is it? It's a government health educational. It gives your weight and then your height, and then it tells you if you're at a healthy weight, overweight, or obese. And according
correct.
To these charts, there are people that are in the overweight category that do not look overweight to me.
Well, you know, that BMI or body mass index is a mere calculation with your height and your weight. It doesn't really take into account if you're muscular, but... to tell the truth, most folks who are overweight or obese via the BMI measurement are truly overweight or obese. So there's very few people who are that athletic and muscular that, you know, it may be an incorrect number.
Catherine, why I'm curious as to why most of the states, and I know this sounds horrible, but I can't figure out why of the top 10 states that had overweight people, most of them were located in the South.
Gravy, dummy.
Is it gravy? Is that why? That can't be it.
No, it's because the Southerners are more truthful in reporting obesity than we are.
Really? I wonder why would that be?
There's some thought that, well, I think culturally, you know, we're all a little different, Midwest versus South. I mean, typically, Colorado's been the very lowest state for obesity for many years, and even they're starting to inch up now over 20% as well. Mm-hmm.
Is that because everybody, and I'm not trying to be funny here, but there's a lot of skiing and a lot of outdoor activities there. Is that why they were low on the chart or because of the legalized pot?
Oh.
Well, the
legalized pot is a new thing, but right, typically people who flock to Colorado are, you know, not to overgeneralize, but they're more out, you know, they're outdoorsy.
They
right,
hike, sure. They ski.
So they hike, they bike, they ski, they spend a lot of time outdoors, whereas, you know, around here we tend to be, again, not to generalize, but more couch people.
Yeah.
Now, is it more important on these charts to go with waist measurement? Because they're saying if women have greater than 35 inches on their waist, then they're at risk for developing heart disease and diabetes, and definitely overweight. If your waist is bigger than 35 inches, for men, it's 40 inches.
Yeah, and that's very true. And you know how sometimes men will wear their pants like low, below their belly? And mm-hmm. say, like, they'll have a lower waist measurement. But, right, you have to actually measure around the belly. And that does tell you a lot because folks with diabetes and hypertension, things like that, typically do, for the most part, have a larger waist circumference.
All right. Interesting. Well, thank you for clearing this up. And I'm sorry to find out that more of us are overweight than we originally thought.
Yeah.
60%, really.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Catherine.
Doesn't that number, I mean, you knew it was going to be up there, but did you know it'd be that high? That's really a high number.
Yeah, but at least I'm not alone.
That's the silver lining. All right, let's take a quick break. News is next. Steve has the news, and then we have more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill, a little while ago, we had Elizabeth Fisher on the show, who is behind Sela Freedom, offers 12-month residential recovery programs, at-risk teen prevention programs, and outreach to survivors of sex trafficking, basically. And Elizabeth, thank you for joining us again.
Thanks for having me back.
You absolutely. Told some chilling stories last time, by the way. Some really awful, awful things.
I know.
And no one thinks about it here in our hometown. You think about it as in another country, and there's nothing going on here, which is totally not the case.
Not the case, sadly. Especially not Chicago.
Which, that really shocks me, honestly.
I know. And not just inner city Chicago, but all of Chicagoland and suburbs.
The more upscale suburbs, those that are not as fortunate, it really doesn't know any economic value, does it?
No, because the root is sexual abuse. And you guys just had a really huge trafficking bust in Naperville.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sexual abuse is one out of three little girls, regardless of where they live.
Yeah.
It's sick and it's scary. And you have brought a guest with you, Dr. Q.
Yes.
And you guys are doing something together?
Yes. Well, I thought since last time I told you all the gloom and doom, right, of what is happening and how this
and
is number five city in the country for our own kids being sold for sex, I thought today I would come back with some highlights because there's some fabulous solutions. Our first house we now have, and it is not far from here at all. And then since I was here, we had a second home donated, 11 bedrooms. It's definite. And Dr. Q came with me to help find more people like him because he is able to clear trauma. As a counselor myself, I can never do. He has a special technique that literally within an hour to 2 hours, a girl that was so traumatized, she couldn't sleep in a bed or in the dark, only in fetal position, goes back to being able to be restored on her path to healing. And it's like instant and no one believes it. So I'm like, I want you guys to hear the good of what we do, of why these girls will make it and why you want to help us get ready and rocking and rolling here.
All right, Dr. Q, I have to ask you, and this might be popping into other people's minds.
Sure.
These girls have been abused most of the time by men. How do they trust you? Seriously, I would imagine that would be a big wall right away.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think the biggest thing that you're wanting to do is cause people to be in connection with you. So if you're able to listen to somebody and listen to who they really are and listen really to them as great, that they have all of the internal resources they need to deal with anything that's happened to them, then you're going to have a whole different way that you can frame a conversation with them.
We asked Elizabeth this question last time, but I would love to hear your take on this as well. I know that no two stories are alike, but is there a typical way that this happens? It just seems so foreign to most of us that this is going on in our own city, right under our own noses. But what happens that gets a girl, sadly, involved in a situation like this?
Unfortunately, the root causes come from early childhood sexual violence, whether that be from a friend, a family member, a relative, a cousin.
Yeah.
And lots of it comes from that stuff first. And then they're in a violent, unpredictable household, and so they leave it.
Yeah.
And that's when they get picked up by somebody who traffics them.
And I take us through it, because I just can't imagine being abused by a family member that you're supposed to be trusting. Obviously, it sends shock through their system, but when they decide to go to sex trafficking, do they just kind of harden up and become a little colder to it and think, this is just what I'm here for?
Well, I think that there's two things that happen. Sometimes it's about them owning their own power. Like, it was done to me, and I'm doing it. Then the secondary problem with that is then they get hooked into the trafficking thing. Drugs sometimes get involved, and then it's not necessarily their own choice. But a lot of times at first, it's to own and have my own power.
Yeah, because especially, that's so true. The younger the girl is, the harder it is to get her out of it. Like when we get a girl that's just 18, 17, 18, 19, they're the hardest to help because they're still caught up in the, hey, I was worth a lot of money out there and people wanted me more than they wanted her. And yeah. It justifies it in their head because they had to get that protective shell.
You just said young girls, 18 and 19, but sadly it goes a lot younger than that, doesn't
it?
Oh,
yeah. And those 12 to 14-year-olds that first start out in it, you know, we don't often see them. It's typically a child that runs away at 11 or 12. You know, they're caught up in it and they're within 48 hours approached by somebody. And those girls, when they're that young, they're
and vulnerable.
And they don't really surface. They're typically sold 15 to 40 times a day for 7 years. It's only when they're like 18, 19 that the guy that owns them is not as controlling, and he might send them out to also break into a house because they need a little more money. And these girls are getting arrested. And so they're getting all these charges. And law enforcement used to be like, oh my gosh, these girls, throw them in jail. And now they're like, oh, that's their backstory. Yeah. These girls.
So are they doing this obviously to get money and to survive, but because finally they feel that someone cares about them, even though it's false?
Because the girls don't get the money. The girls don't get the money at all. Like one of the girls that we dealt with had gotten scalped because she tried to hide some of the money. Because when they realize, okay, he really might not love me, but how the heck do I get out of here? They might try to hide some money. And so he's had girls that we've sent him that have been left for dead in garbage bags. Scalped, we have to go pick them up. The police have them with, I mean, on the brink of death, a lot of these girls, because they wanted to escape. So they don't get the money, but it is the belonging.
Is, forgive me for not knowing this, but I don't know this. Is there any difference between prostitution and sex trafficking? It's the same, isn't it? Or is it different?
It just bleeds into, yeah. Any child sold for sex under the age of 18 is automatically child trafficking. And if they're 18 and older, you have to prove force, fraud, or coercion. But that can almost always be proved coercion because they were sold as a minor. Yeah. And it's just continuing the only life they know.
And how do you get them out of this life? I mean, if they're busy and working right now, they're not listening to WGN radio right now. How do you get your message out there?
Well, now we partnered. Law enforcement knows. The outreach agencies know. And then once a girl hears about us, you know, this is what we're hoping is going to happen in Chicago. We have such street cred in Florida that the girls know I could run to Sailor Freedom. I could run to law enforcement.
And this is where it originally started
in
Florida.
Yeah, we started in Florida. And so they know that there's a Dr. Q waiting on the other side. They know that if I could just, so girls will say to us, I was waiting for a bed to open because I knew if I didn't get in, I'd probably die out there this time. So we want the word to spread. So for all the agencies, we'll start holding collaborative meetings here so they learn more. And that's why I wanted Dr. Q to come, because that's the missing piece that a lot of people don't have the benefit of having in their program, is that rapid change part that he can do with the neuro reset.
It's dangerous, possibly even life-threatening, though, for them to escape, isn't it?
Well, you know what, like for what we do with the housing, the reason we're starting housing 18 plus here is because there's nothing for, and most of the girls that are circling the jails are 18 to 26.
Yeah.
Jail's not where they need to
be. Oh, no. But an 18, 19-year-old that comes to us, we were used to be like, oh, no, the trafficker's going to be looking for us. No, they're looking for their next 11-year-old. Our girls
old. They move on.
Oh, yeah. Our girls all used up. They don't, no one cares. And it's pathetic. Yeah, so
people listening in the area right now, in the Chicago area, what can they do to get help for someone they know or to get help for themselves?
Well, we have a volunteer meeting Friday being held in Northfield. We call them Connect Team meetings. So if they go to our website, selahfreedom.com, S-E-L-A-H, freedom.com, they can get information. If they click on the top left, it says regions, and click on Midwest, there's all the information there. But 11 a.m. on Friday, there is a Connect Team meeting. Dr. Q will be there. We're looking for a therapist that might be trained, and you could speak more to this, of what we're looking for. But anyone that wants to get involved, show up at 11 a.m. in Northfield, and the information's on the website. And then I'm doing a TED Talk at the end of the month if they want to just bring someone because they don't believe it, they need to hear it again.
Yeah.
And the TED Talk, where does that take place?
That's going to be in Oak Park.
Oh, so you're going to be here for a while then?
I'm here almost all of October if anyone needs me. Right. Yes, yes. But we're looking for therapists. Say just the piece, the words.
Yeah, so I mean, certainly if there are therapists that are trained in rapid trauma resolution, that has tenets based in neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, the essence of it is this. The research with neuroscience tells us that when a memory moves from the long-term stores into the present moment, it's changeable. So the problem with trauma is that it gets coded at such a deep level that regular talk therapy about processing doesn't actually heal those wounds.
Because it's just in too deep.
Yeah.
It ingrains it. Yep.
Exactly. So what we've got to do is we've actually got to unplug that memory so that the brain reads it as data about something that happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when that memory comes into the long-term stores, if you keep the person emotionally present,
mm-hmm.
when they're recalling it, it's going to change at a deeper coding the way that memory is for the person. The pain that was attached to it is gone, and they're no longer haunted by the stuff that they went through.
Please tell me.
That is so deep. It's so cool. I'm sorry.
I have gone through it, and I'm a therapist. I have a master's level clinician as well, and I have talk therapy and talk, cry. Ridiculous. He doesn't even let you cry. And it also,
but what if you do cry?
But he taps into something that's a piece of a memory that you don't even think is significant, and all of a sudden, I mean, it's, and you leave after that 1-2 hour session changed.
What if they've blocked it out?
They don't have to know what it was. I mean, the interesting thing is the body keeps score,
yeah,
and our mind knows which experiences still are active, and our body knows how to heal itself. It's just about, just like a bone heals when we set it and then put the cast around it,
yeah.
It's the same thing for the emotional wounds. They heal from the inside out, not like traditional therapy from a top-down approach.
Is it possible, please tell me it's possible at some point for somebody who's endured this for years to live a fairly normal life? Is it possible?
I think it's possible, and not just possible, but probable.
Yeah, good.
When you're able to get the impact that those haunting experiences have had cleared and gone,
yeah,
they're not going to reactivate for the person. Then you can do other kinds of training and education, which Selah does with their girls,
yeah,
so that they can be self-sufficient. They learn skills that they can take care of themselves. Without getting the trauma cleared, it's really hard, yeah, to learn those self-care skills.
Now, is this a type of hypnotherapy? Is this regular therapy? How does this work where you can delve into some memory that they don't even know they have?
Well, what I would call it is we're using a variety of accelerated healing methods. So, yes, does it take tenets from rapid trauma resolution, the neuro-linguistic programming, the hypnosis? It takes tenets from all of that, but really it's a conversation. If you start to explain to somebody...
I am blown away by this, by the way. I mean, I'm serious.
But it works. It's amazing. I wouldn't do what we do without it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you start to explain to somebody why the troubling experience has continued to haunt them and how we're able to get it better, then you can make those adjustments. Lots of times people think that I'm troubled because that was awful. But they're not troubled because it was awful. They're troubled because part of their brain never got that it stopped. The error is a computer glitch that their brain never got that it's over. That's why thoughts about it will trigger emotion. That's why reminders of it will trigger emotion. Once that deeper part of the brain gets unplugged,
mm-hmm,
and it's read as memory data, it no longer has the emotion, and it no longer will reactivate for that person.
Is there an element of, we always hear about people who are abused, sometimes women, sometimes kids, there's some self-blame. There's an element of self-blame. Is that a big part of this?
Well, I would say that yes, without a doubt. There's the I hate myself. There's the guilt. There's, yeah, the shame. There's the pain and the anger.
Yeah.
There's the feeling like I need to forgive the perpetrator or try to forgive myself.
Uh-huh.
And the good news with all of that stuff is that you're able to get rid of the shame, the guilt, the self-hatred. I worked with one of the survivors at Selah, and she had so much self-disgust, not just about being trafficked, but then some of the things that she wound up doing, that like she hated herself. And when we got that changed and it all lifted from her, her face literally changed. She looked like a different person. And she said, like, I'm awesome. Like, I'm okay. Like,
she got it, she finally. Did.
Like, it changed for her.
Now, is this
she
something,
got freedom.
Is it similar, and I'm trying to just kind of put this in common terms where more people could understand it. Say, for instance, someone has anorexia. They're very, very thin. They look in the mirror. They still say, I'm heavy. I got to keep losing weight. Is it the same kind of thing where all of a sudden, if they realized their problem's over with, they can move forward?
I would say one other piece to that, because yes, that is a very good way to represent it, but I would say that it needs to change at an emotional level, not at a talk and tell myself level. So where we want to make changes for people is at a deeper feeling level, because then it changes how I think. If I try to change how I think to change how I feel, it doesn't work, because I can know that I shouldn't feel bad, but I still do.
Right. Okay. That makes sense to mm-hmm. me.
Yeah.
All right. We have to take a quick break. This is fascinating to me. We're talking to Dr. Q. We have Elizabeth Fisher here, and she is behind Sela Freedom. You can go to selafreedom.com. It's S-E-L-A-H freedom.com. Find out more about these recovery programs and all the work she's put into it. It's your baby. We'll continue talking. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about sex trafficking. Ugly, ugly story. Elizabeth Fisher is here making a return visit. And Dr. Q, Dr. Jason Quintel, telling us stories about this. And finally, there is some hope. Thanks to you guys. Things are getting... Like I said, it's a devastating tale, but you guys are showing that there is hope out there. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, really
thank
appreciate you. It.
And we have basically Sela Freedom helps girls that have gotten out of the business, and you give them a place to live. Because I can only imagine, okay, finally, I ran away. What do I do? Where do I go? Is someone going to try and find me? That's what Sela Freedom's about, isn't it?
Well, it's about getting those poor girls that have been trapped in it. Most of our girls have been in it for at least 7 years by the time they get to Sela Freedom. And the wait list, the minute we open our doors, there's going to be a wait list for these poor girls, you know. So I would really encourage people. There's so many ways to help and get involved. Like, it might not be money. Everybody might not want to just dish out money to help us, you know, do more. But, like, the new home that we're opening, bedrooms need to be sponsored. You can adopt a room, get it ready like you would your daughter's dorm room, two mm-hmm. twin beds, and paint it.
That's kind of fun, really, for someone
so
who has some extra money
right?
that wants to help.
Yeah, because people are like, oh, it's so depressing. I don't know what I could do. I'm like, well, then go on our registry and help buy some kitchen gadgets. You mm-hmm. could shop.
Yeah, that's fun to do, and you're helping someone else. So yeah. to get on your registry and to volunteer your services, and Dr. Q, you're helping these girls in a way no one else can. But if there maybe are therapists or clinicians that are listening right now that want to jump on board, all this information can be found on the website?
Yes, and we would encourage them to come to the meeting on Friday.
Give some more details on that again. That's Friday at 11 a.m.
Friday,
in Northfield.
Yep, from 11 a.m. to 12:30. It's being held at a school out there. It's called Christian Heritage Academy. They have a nice big room we're using. And if someone cannot make that meeting, they could just email from our website, info@selafreedom.com, and Dr. Q will set up time with them. We want to get people that, there are people here that have this skill
yeah.
set that he has.
Yeah.
We are just now ready for them. We want to raise them up. So in, you know, 30 days when our program starts, they're on board.
Good. And talk about the TED Talk really quickly, too. That's October the 27th.
It's October the 27th. It is in Oak Park. The theme this year is... It's time. So it fits well to say it's time, you guys. Let's look again. Here's what's really happening. And it could be the girl next door.
You don't even think about it here. I know I sound foolish saying that, but you don't. You think it's happening somewhere else and not here.
That
and
girl, that country, that problem over there.
Yeah.
And it's not just the city. It's the suburbs as well. You said Naperville has a big problem.
Yeah. There's a video out about a girl that grew up in the North Shore. Yeah.
All right. Give the website again. Spell it. Give it correctly, because people who want to help or just want to, maybe you know someone.
Oh,
maybe
my gosh.
You want to help
so
someone.
So many things. Absolutely. Everything's on the web. SelaFreedom.com. So S like Sam, E L like Larry, A H like happy.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom.com.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth Fisher. We hope to keep in touch with you. And you started in Florida and now there is a residence here.
Yep.
And there will be another one opening
soon. Second one, 11 bedrooms.
Where's the one that's open currently? Or you can't really give locations.
Well, they're safe houses. So
yeah,
I can tell you from where we're sitting right now, it would probably take a half hour to get there. Mm. Won't tell you what direction.
Yeah,
and then the second home is a good, you know, 45 minutes from there. So we give them the two stages. Come to one home, see if you're really, really ready. And if you're not, that's okay. Come back, leave and come. But if they're really, really ready, they come to the main residential. And it's 12 months of everything you've ever given your own child.
That's how naive I am. I'm like, oh, where's the location? No, I'm sorry. I just, I'm unaware of this.
I could tell you, but.
Yeah.
Right. And for some people that, honestly, there are a few people who don't have computers, is there a phone number that they can reach out to you?
Yes. We have our, you can call 941-677-8840.
Why don't you give that one more time?
941-677-8840.
Continued success with this great project that you've brought to us, and thank you for it.
Thanks for the opportunity. We'll keep you
posted.
Thanks
for having us here.
We appreciate it.